I started Luxury Exchange not thinking that that was the thing. Word of mouth grew really quickly because I had a really fast sell-through rate. I'd take things and I'd like, no, people will want that, and I'd sell it really quick.
Last year, we done just over €1 million in sales. That was double on the year prior. This year, like as little ago as a month, we were like looking at kind of 4 million there, thereabouts. Unless you find something that's really going to make all this worth it, you know, you won't sustain years of this. So that would be my one bit of advice.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Time's running out. Windows 10 support ends this October. That means no updates, no more security patches. That is a major risk for you and your business. But Nostra is helping you and your business upgrade. Book your free consultancy call. Simply click the link in the description below the podcast episode. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
Killian, Kat, welcome to the pod.
Oh, thanks for having us. Thanks for having us.
What a pleasure. Two for the price of one. What do you do?
You or me?
Well, it's a loaded question, but I'll let you take it.
Okay. So I'm the founder of Luxury Exchange, and my day-to-day life is creating reels, buying, and selling, pretty much.
What do you do? So if she does all that, what actually you do?
Nothing at all. No, I'm in charge of operations, financials, and growth.
Yeah, sounds like Kat does all the hard work.
She does do all the hard work. Yeah, but I do some work that's kind of relevant still.
All the boring stuff.
Yeah.
The boring stuff for sure.
Yeah. So Gary and I just had a coffee, and I went quite hard at him, and I feel like he's going to give it back here. So to prepare the listeners that this could be a bit of a duel.
There's no secrets here. What happened is we had some technical issues and Killian made it way worse just by kept talking about it and talking about it. So there'll be a little bit of payback, Killian, a little bit of payback.
Trust me, I know all about that.
Kat, all the good questions are going to you.
Yeah.
We're going to edit you to look just superb.
Oh, yeah.
How did this start?
So I was working in Brown Thomas in Cork, and I always had like an obsession with retail. So I loved working there. I definitely always had a desire to do something for myself. But I started Luxury Exchange not thinking that that was the thing. I just started it purely because I was a shopaholic. I had customers coming in and they would be like, oh, I would love to buy that, but you know, I just bought so many things, haven't worn them, or I've worn them once, I feel so guilty, you know, don't want to give them away. And I would be like, I'd love to buy that. And I bet that they'd be happy with what I could afford to pay because they just don't want to give it away. And so I set up this Instagram page and I would take their stuff or things from people working in Brown Thomas, and I would just put it up on the page and I'd sell it and I'd post it. And that was still while I was working in Brown Thomas. And word of mouth grew really quickly because I had a really fast sell-through rate. I'd take things and I'd like, no, people will want that, and I'd sell it really quick. And what, that's how it started.
Why do you think that was, though? Because I think a lot of people look at businesses like this and go, oh, yeah, cool, that makes sense. But you said something there, the sell-through rate was really quick. Was that down to your taste?
Yeah, my taste. I think also my genuine interest, and also just the value in the product being really good. So I would filter out anything that I'd say, do you know what, people won't want that. Take in what I think people will want and then price it well. And the value is great. So, you know, combining that with a trustful face that's also knowledgeable in the product and can help with sizing, can help with advice. I think, you know, what's not to love in a sense?
Yeah. So you would say, no, that won't sell. I can't take that, but I'll take this and this. That you'd almost use your kind of like, you'd have a filter.
Yeah, that came on more so with experience. But at the start, I was only taking like the odd bit. So someone would say, I have these Celine sunglasses, and I'd take them and sell them. And then they might say, oh, I have these really old ones from a lesser brand and the lens is scratched. And I kind of say, I don't think that they're going to sell. And then I started to get these big hauls of pieces from big BT customers. And then I would be left with certain pieces selling other pieces. And then I got a feel for like, right, I only have a certain amount of time on screen to show these. So I need to start saying, this is what will sell and this is what won't.
I love that. So taste.
Yeah, and curation, like curating that product. Because a big thing with pre-loved, I think we all want to shop pre-loved, because who doesn't? Like, you've got good value, good products when it's designer especially. But you often have to go through a load of rubbish. You're still spending a lot of money. So you don't want that feeling. I mean, it's okay if you're picking up pieces maybe in a charity shop, you might be spending €8, €10. But when you're buying designer pre-loved, you're still spending at least a few hundred euro. So you want that curated collection where everything is nice and it's just up to you to choose, well, what's right for you.
I love that. That's a great summary of it, I think, because
thank you.
It's so hard to kind of like put an exact term on what it is.
Yeah.
So you curated your kind of your taste and your style as you went through the process. What early mistakes did you make?
There's a few. So, well, it's like mistakes, but you learn from them. So at the start,
very wise.
At the start, like I have no business degree, no business qualification. And I started Luxury Exchange and I charged 10% commission. So I didn't even know industry standard is like 50 or 60%.
What?
I was charging 10, thinking, oh, I sell something for €100, I make a tenner. Can't believe that I'm going to actually make money from this. So at 10% commission, which is just crazy. You can't make money from that by the time, you know, if you were to start advertising and you wanted to pay yourself, like it literally doesn't make sense. But what it did do was it gave people a chance to say, ah, do you know what, I'll give her a go. And that also helped fire around my word of mouth. So even though you could say it was a mistake, I'm actually grateful for the naivety that I had to say 10%. Yeah, sure, that'll work out for me.
We don't know what you don't know. We talk about this all the time in the podcast. How you ever meant to know. We were kind of talking about this outside as well. People try figure everything out before they start.
Yeah.
How are you meant to know?
Oh, you can't. And also, sometimes there you can think about things too much and scare yourself out of doing them. Whereas like I started Luxury Exchange, it was tiny, it was nothing. Then suddenly it was like, oh my God, I'm wrecked. I'm working a full-time job. I'm coming home and I'm working another full-time job. What am I going to do here? It was nearly a good thing, because had I thought about like, oh, if am I going to start this business, is it going to be able to pay me? Am I going to leave my other job? It's pretty overwhelming, but I just started and all of a sudden it just happened.
What was the point where you were like, I think this might work?
I love that question because this is my favorite podcast and I love that question. But I really don't know if I have an answer for it myself. There was a few, like I was so nervous leaving my job to do it full time. I really was. And when I left and it worked out and it got busier and busier, that was good. That wasn't like an exact moment. I also had a moment when somebody tried to invest in the business. That was another moment where I was like, this person's smart and they want to take their money and they want to give it to me. Like, what's that about? Then there was the moment where you left, or Killian left his really good job to join. And I was like, again, you know, he has a really good job and he's leaving to come on to this. And then obviously a massive moment recently was when I went to the front doors of our pop-up on our opening day. And there's a queue there of physical people, because that was my first time seeing some of these people physically. I'm like, they're real people and they've gotten up this morning to come in here to shop from Luxury Exchange. It's one thing when you see it all digitally, you can forget that these are real people. I mean, the customer is everything for me, but in terms of the quantity, like viewing things, you just see the number. But then you go outside and you see a queue and you're like, each one of these views is actually a person and they're here right now today. So that was another, the pop-up was a serious moment for me.
When Kat started this, what did you think?
Well, from the get-go, I thought the 10% commission was a bit crazy, because obviously you just cannot possibly make money. But I was thinking about it purely from a business perspective. Whilst, as Kat said, she did start this as like a passion project. It wasn't to make money. And she was still in employment at the time in Brown Thomas. So I thought, look, she's just enjoying it. She's doing this on the side. She's meeting people. She's getting to, you know, extend out her career in fashion, doing something else. So obviously I was so focused on my own career at the time. I wasn't really, you know, getting into the weeds of, I just said, look, let her at it and she'll figure it out. But before we carry on, just one point I want to make there, because it's relevant, is like on the pop-up, just for an example of how humble Kat is, when we were driving up on the Wednesday, so the opening day was on the Thursday, because it was a good question you asked there, when did she know it was going to be like, you know, a real thing? And the reason she struggles to answer that is because just how much at every juncture she underestimates what she's achieved. So I can rattle off five or six like key moments in the business where that was a real step forward. And you nearly need to point it out to Kat because she doesn't even recognize how big of a milestone that was. Part of it, obviously, it's like just huge humility, but also she does underestimate, you know, what it is she has achieved. The two go hand in hand. And on the Wednesday, when we were driving up, myself, Jack, and Kat was in the car. Jack is our employee who works with us. And she said, like, what if no one shows up for the 4 days? Like, what if? And you're laughing. I'm serious, Gary.
No,
you know I'm serious.
I'm laughing because it's completely human. We would all, I've done live shows and I'm going, imagine, right? Imagine you just get the guest there. You're like, It's just a podcast, not a live at all.
Yeah.
There's just no one there.
She's like, what if? And obviously there was a lot of PR. We'd done a lot of marketing. And she's like, what if like no one shows up for 4 days and no one buys anything? And I remember like, and Jack was there. He can account for this. I looked at her and I was like, what planet are you living on? Like, are you living here on planet Earth? Like, we've already received hundreds of inbound DMs and emails of people saying they can't wait to come, they can't wait to meet us, we'll see you there on the first day. And Kat was like, but what if they don't come? And I think that's just an example of like her humility, which is part of the reason like Luxury Exchange has been, you know, so successful.
So what do you think the moments were?
I think there was a few. I remember it was the summer of 2021, lockdown was still taking place, and Kat's parents has a holiday home down in Waterville, and we all went down to Waterville. They just lifted the 5 kilometre restriction, you could travel. First time in a while, it was just after another one of those lockdowns. We went down to Waterville, and Kat, I don't know, do you remember this? You might remember it. She brought down like a huge collection, you know, maybe 30 or 40 pieces. And we'd done our first live show from the house in Waterville, and it pretty much completely sold out.
It was a Prada Live.
It was a Prada Live, good memory. And I think we'd done like 6 or 7 grand on the live show on sales.
What do you mean live show? What is that?
Instagram Live. So she went live on Instagram to, you know, present the pieces live. People could interact with her live on the Instagram show. They'd then DM to purchase an item that they liked from the live show. We'd send them a link and they'd purchase it. And as the live was going on, stuff just started flying off the shelves. And like I said, I was so focused on what I was doing in my career, I wasn't really paying attention. But we were down there for a weekend. I wasn't working. I was looking at what she was doing. And it's kind of like scratching my head. And it's like, she just, you know, sold like 6 grand's worth of stuff in an hour. And like, that was the first like moment for me where I thought, wow, like what the hell? Like what's she onto here? And you're about a year into it at this stage. Obviously the Instagram page had started in kind of the summer of 2020. This was a year later. This was the summer of 21. You know, it was, you were starting to take it a bit more serious. And I remember we went to bed that night and I said, God, like, that's mental what you just did there. Like, I don't think you realise how difficult that is. And of course, she didn't. She didn't realise it at all. Like, just totally went over her head. So that was the first, like, moment where I thought this could really be something. And then that September, you ran a mini pop-up shop in a boutique in Douglas.
In my friend's store.
A friend of Kat, who's been very supportive of the business from day one, Vicky Kreber is her name. She owns a boutique in Douglas Shopping Centre. It's all
shout out, Vicky.
Runs a great business. She's worth it.
Yeah.
But she put a space out about the size of this room where Kat could go in and, like, sell some of her pieces. So this was a couple of months on from that pop-up. And again, I was actually in Dublin working the weekend it was on, so I couldn't get in. But at the end of each day, like, Kat would text me on, like, what she'd done in sales that day. Like, you know, it was like 10 grand the first day, 11 grand the second day. I was like, Kat, this is mental. Like, you know, like, they're actually coming in. Like, is this real? And I remember actually coming back from Cork and, like, looking at the till and looking at the bank. And I was like, no, they actually, this is real stuff. So that was the second moment. That was, September 2021. And then by January, you had a good Christmas period, which, like, wasn't a particular moment, but that Christmas she was busy. Like, stuff was selling. I was after getting involved at this stage because I had to help out with just general, like, admin stuff that needed doing, paying VAT, all of these other things that had built up because, you know, it wasn't meant to be a business. I said, Kat, have you paid the VAT, man? Oh, well, we better get on top of all of this. So we got on top of everything, and that Q4 of 21 was, like, really busy. And then it was that January that, you know, it was kind of make it up. Like, are you going to take this serious or not? Mm. And then she left to go full-time in the business. She left Brown Thomas in January 22 to go full-time on what then was Luxury Exchange. Initially, it was just an Instagram page. It wasn't Luxury Exchange from the get-go, but she came up with this all by herself, this kind of brand, this idea. And then January 2022, she went full-time. And, like, immediately once she dedicated all of her time to the business, like, that January was way busier than the December period that had just gone the previous month, which was obviously the Christmas rush. But the minute she went all in on the business, that January just exploded. 2022 was a great year. It's like those are kind of milestones where, you know, you could easily track the progress. Like, it was going one way. And
for you, Kat, those moments he describes, what did they feel like?
I remember, and it's funny that you brought up that pop-up. It's a weird one. I nearly don't want to call it a pop-up because it's so different to the pop-up we just did, which is what I would call our first pop-up because we controlled the whole space. But I do definitely agree with what he says about that I can underestimate myself a bit. And I have this amazing friend, Vicky, that owns that boutique, It's So Me. And she was saying, come in with some of your stuff. Come on, like, people will come. You know, she knows me. She was like, people will show up. They will buy things, I'm telling you. And I was like, what if they're not showing up? And she said, you can have the front corner of my store right by the door, right by the window. You can have your own window. Just come in. No financial gain for her. Like, just come in. All encouragement. And I went in with my stock. And what I do remember is, you were away, and I text my dad and I was like, can you find more stock? And he starts coming on his bike with stock in the pannier of his bike. And next thing it's like, does mom have some stuff she'll sell? Can you come back on the bike? And he was coming back and forth on the bike because I was running out of stock. And obviously I thought, you know, are people even going to show up? And next thing I'm texting my dad to come by on the bike. So that was what I thought of there when you said that. That was definitely a very special time. Because it was again that moment where things are real. Then also when you're talking about when I left my job now, as you can tell by the 10% commission, money and financials is kind of always secondary to me, or it definitely was at the very beginning until I wanted to start buying stock myself. But at the beginning, I wasn't even thinking about it. But I do remember I left the concession I worked for. And next thing, which I obviously knew the numbers of because I was full time, next thing Luxury Exchange was making more than that concession. And I thought, well, okay, I know I'm humble. This is surely good when you think that that place has that footfall and it's a massive brand. And now I know what they were making, and now I know that I'm selling more than that. So that was something I thought of when you said that as well. It's funny the way I'm always thinking of the future, and, you know, thinking what can be better. So sometimes it is nice when people bring up moments in the past and you think, yeah, actually, that was really special.
That was really interesting to see your reaction and your reaction, because the two different perspectives, like, because when you're in it, it's so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't want to get complacent.
Yeah.
You're also just doing it. You're not really overthinking it. Go, what does this feel like? Because you can't. Yeah, yeah. And you also have the fear of like, is this going to work? Is it going to keep working? Have you just got lucky once?
Yeah.
Talk to me about the lives, because I think that's really interesting. Because everyone's talking about like Instagram or TikTok Live now, but you were doing that way before it was kind of popular.
Yeah. My first Christmas in business, I did a children's charity sale. And basically, people that I was selling for donated designer children's wear. And we raised money for the Cork Children's Hospital first, and then the second year we did it for Laura Lynn, but this first year it was for the Cork City Children's Hospital. And that was the first time I decided to go live for this charity event. And I went live, I was only watching it the other day, I think I would just scroll back just to take a look at it, and I was very nervous, as I'm sure I know a lot of people avoid going live because there's something nerve-wracking about it. Of course there is. And if you're like me, you'll be thinking, what if Novan tunes in? But he has a big family. So thankfully I knew that I'd at least have about 20 people in between brothers and cousins. And we got over 100 views. And the children's live sold out. So then I thought, that was really enjoyable. And to be fair, I did know it was something I was comfortable with and something that I could tell the people watching enjoyed. So then I planned this Prada live, which is the live that was took place in Waterville. And that was a major success. Like, we took a long time, I suppose then it was I took a long time to curate this Prada stock. So everything in it had to be Prada. And then I went.
So were you
live.
Buying stock at this stage?
No.
Okay.
So at this stage, I mean, it was all just started as a hobby.
Skint, Gary. We had no money. Buy stock. Do you know how expensive Prada bags are?
Well, I'm looking at that suit. They're making money now.
So I just reached out to people. I was like, do you have any Prada? I mean, to be honest, the brand chose itself based on like what I could get the most of. But I had the idea for a live that was just one brand, which is something I still do to this day because it's nice. You can go in the theme of that brand. So we had dresses, shoes and bags, and it sold out, which was crazy. And that was the start of the live shopping. Now I go live pretty much every day, and sometimes twice a day.
Wow.
Sometimes four times a day. The other day I went live four times. It's my favorite thing to do. I think it's so real. You can really connect with the customer. I also know my customers really enjoy it, which is a huge thing for me. I'm lucky that people tune in because it's a lot harder to go live, which I also know when less people are tuning in, you feel like you're talking to yourself. When you know that there's 150 people on the other end, it's more enjoyable. That's just the truth of it. But I love doing it. And I also have feedback from people. It started with people saying, I work, but I love shopping, but I can't get into town. I hate online shopping. And when I watch these lives, I feel like it's in person. There's also the aspect of people that just can't get out for other reasons. We have people who have kids that are unwell, people that are unwell themselves. Even my own mom, she's in a wheelchair. She loves shopping, hates online shopping. You know, it's not the same. I don't get the same experience. She's addicted to the lives. Even though she might be a bit biased, but she's addicted to the lives because it gives her that feeling of being out shopping and being interacted with by another person. But she's at home, or people are on the Lewis, or people are pushing a buggy through Tesco and they have the AirPods in and they're watching.
That's so interesting because I never really understood it.
Yeah.
So all I hear about the minute is TikTok Live, TikTok Live. And I'm like kind of going, the figures people are talking about are astronomical. Yeah. And until you explained it to me there, I kind of didn't get it. Now it makes total sense.
Yeah, well, it's a real connection. A lot of people do go live. They're very like sales focused. And of course, we all have to make sales. But I do think our lives are very entertaining. And that's a big difference. I know that a lot of people watching it, it's as well as shopping, it's an escape for them. It's entertainment for them. It's the time of the day when they put their AirPods in and it's just them treating themselves, even if they're not buying, but to that time.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I'm going to make it entertaining. There's going to be music. There's going to be laughs. There's going to be random deals. And I always say, I do not care if you're not buying. I know that even though our stuff's great value, I know it's not cheap. If you love fashion, I want you in the live. I want you watching. I want you coming to the pop-up. That was another thing I said. Like, it's entertainment and it's a community. And the more people watching, the better.
Damn. Yeah. I'm sold. I'm going to be watching now.
Make sure you're watching.
Probably will be now. That's every day, though. That's so like that's a production in itself. Like, mm-hmm. How do you think about it?
So I do some lives that are very planned, and I like to have a mix. So we'll do some lives, like at Christmas, we did a big live. We called it the Toy Show for Women. So it was, you know, the Christmas tree was there, the playlist was made, I had my outfit done, hair done. And then other times I go live and I've got a new delivery and I've no makeup on and I'm like, right, we just got a delivery, who wants to unbox it with me? So it's not always a full production. Sometimes it's just throw the microphone on and go. And I do a mix because people like different things, and some will have a big build up and some will be like, we're going live in 2 minutes if anyone can tune in.
Killeen, when you joined, was it hard to get your head around all of this?
When I joined full time, it wasn't, because I was already working in the business at that stage, kind of over a year. But when I first started, like working in the business with Kat, yes, I did find it like very tough to wrap my head around. First of all, I didn't think there'd be a huge market for like pre-loved goods. I still had the view that pre-loved was kind of like, you know, you go into a charity shop and, you know, I'm obviously into fashion, as you know. I've bought a lot of stuff even already at that stage, like in shops. I enjoyed that experience. The whole idea of pre-loved, I didn't really get it. But one of the things that Kat, again, is excellent at is like forecasting culture. And she like knew, you know, this is a thing, like this is real. You know, these vintage pieces are cooler. The quality is better. You can curate more unique pieces. It's not in Ireland yet, but I'm telling you, it's coming. And then anyone that knows us personally knows, like, of unwavering confidence in Kat. When she says this is a thing, I think, well, it's a thing. I just don't know about it yet. Fine. Like, how do we kind of build a business around this thing? So that's then what I kind of initially worked on. So yeah, no, I kind of got to grasp with it pretty quickly, because it's still, you know, you just get in a really good product, you sell it at a very good price. You know, you have a customer now. How do you keep that customer, deliver good service? You know, if there's any issue, you deal with it. All those kind of basic things that I'd done in my career anyway up to that point, we just kind of doubled down on and made, you know, made certain that it all went as smooth as it possibly could. So whatever the product was going to be, like, that was all Kat, and she knew what the customer wanted. And then I just kind of said, well, right, how do we have money in the bank to be able to provide the service for the customer? How do we make sure the thing gets to the customer? If there's an issue, how do we deal with the customer? And yeah, that was kind of how I kind of got involved in that sense.
What did you see his role being when he came on board?
Well, I was very, very overwhelmed very quickly with how busy things got and the fact that I had no experience from a business perspective. All I wanted to do was get in the product, sell the product, make reels, go live. And then next thing, it's like, all of this other stuff that I didn't expect needs to be done. And he started doing it for me on the side, and I was super grateful for it. So it was a natural progression, because I also find if you try and do something you really don't like, it takes all your energy and you take forever at it. And so we work super well as a team because we like doing the total opposite things. We don't ever try cross paths, because I really don't want to know about what you're doing. You're happy to let me off doing what I'm doing. So it was, to be honest, it was very natural, the progression for him to come and take over things that I never really did much of in the first place, to be honest.
No idea how much stock. There was just a room of stock. How much stock do we have? I don't know. Like, it's in that room going over. Like, there was no keeping track of stock. No. Like, it was... But it takes all sorts, you know, it really does. And I think that's why the idea of, and I hear a lot of like operators that I really rate talk about the importance of a co-founder. It's very difficult to do it by yourself. Like, it really is, because it takes, especially if you're serious, if your business is going to be a serious thing, there's a lot required, you know, for that to be the outcome. And no one person can do it. It definitely takes
a team.
We were just very lucky that, you know, kind of our strengths are different. So kind of we dovetail well in that aspect. And then also people talk, obviously we're engaged. We've been together since we were, you know, teenagers. how do you manage like the working relationship with the personal relationship? And it's like, it's the biggest strength ever. Like, she knows, I came from like, you know, a corporate background where people are out to get you, you know, everyone wants that next promotion. I know there's all this jargon of we all work together and we're all a team, like
culture.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you are out and I was equally as bad. Like, I was viciously competitive. If there was a promotion up, you know, I wanted it and I'd do whatever it took to make sure I was the person to get that job. Well, it's with the business, like, she knows 100% that I have her best interests at heart. I know without a shadow of a doubt, she has mine. And therefore, we can be radically transparent, radically open, very honest with one another about how things are going, what we're doing well, what we're not doing well. And it actually leads to just a way more productive business for sure. And then the personal relationship benefits because we get to be with each other like all day, every day. We literally spend every waking second together and we love it. Like, isn't that the dream, you know? So when people say, oh, how does it work? I think, it just works perfectly fine, you know, try it. Yeah.
Look, I think it's not for everybody. I think that's why people are so confused, because people are like, God, I can't stand my partner. and they can't see themselves ever doing that, you know? Yeah. So I think I never really asked that question because it's kind of a bit cliched as well. I think it's no one's business.
Yeah.
You know, clearly it's working. So
yeah.
I like what you said there, Kat, about like you can spend all the time working on your weaknesses or all the time working on your strengths.
Oh yeah.
That's doing a huge self-awareness piece though, isn't it?
Doing what you enjoy is huge, especially because like one thing I can't stress enough here, especially if there's somebody kind of similar to me listening where they don't have big qualifications, they just have a passion they're working on, is we work so much and you have to enjoy it. I'm never thinking, oh, I can't believe now I have to get up and work again. Once I can get up early enough to get like my run done or my workout done, I'm happy to work all day. There's nothing else that I want to do. Nothing. And even like people say, oh, would you take a day off? Because the odd time I might take like half a day off, but I haven't taken a day off in years. That includes my birthday, sister's weddings, things like that. Like to take a full day off, I'm like, what would I be doing? What do people do? This is the honest truth. I'm not saying this to be funny.
No.
Like, I think, what are people doing on their full day off? I really don't know. That's the truth. It's been a long time. I really don't know.
I don't know
what I do.
I love it.
Half a day is enough.
What you do on the half day off?
Nothing. Like,
it's like more if I need to like catch up on personal stuff, if I want to spend time with like, if I want to spend the evening with my parents, I'm really close to my parents. Or like I love running. So if I've got like a race I want to do or something, that's it. But fortunately, to be fair, the one thing on the side I like doing doesn't take very long. Maybe if I was into golf or something, I'd find it harder.
You're a fast runner.
Yeah. I do think back to that point where you're on about like strengths and weaknesses. I do think just doubling down on your strengths is a good strategy. And just because, and I can, on a personal level, I started running during COVID like everyone else. And like I put a lot of time into running and it's like, I'm just not good at it. No matter how much I go out and train, I get it marginally faster. But then, for example, I'm like naturally a very good golfer, play competitive golf when I was younger. I might not play golf for 4 weeks and go out and shoot, you know, level par on the weekend. Like it just comes just so much easier to me. And I'm like, what am I wasting my time from a competitive perspective, which business is, it's competition at the end of the day, trying to get marginally better. And it is marginal at this thing that I'm already not good at, when I can take that same time, allocate it to something else and just continue to be like world class at it. And I do think, especially in modern culture, we're all trying to be like really balanced. You know, that's kind of on trend where, you know, get better, keep trying things. It's like, if you're not good at something, recognize it, scratch it and just keep doubling down on something you're really good at. And it also leads to happiness. I go out for a run and the cat's a fantastic runner. And what are you laughing
You're
at?
You're miserable when you I'm go out miserable. For a run. It's great.
Miserable. It's we'd great be out there and, you know, we'd be doing, we'd have done, let's say we do a 10K and at the end of it, we're getting a coffee and I have a stroppy, like I don't get the runner's high.
No,
I get
endorphins.
None of it. And I have this stroppy look on my face and Kat's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, that was miserable.
You
like,
enjoy none of it?
None of it. Absolutely none of it. And when Kat's on about it, zaps energy from you. Obviously, that's running, but it is definitely the same in work. If you're doing something that you don't enjoy, part of the reason I think you won't enjoy it is you're probably not good at it. If you're good at something, you know, you enjoy doing it. You're really good at interviewing. I asked you earlier when we were having our coffee, like, do you enjoy what you do? Like, do you enjoy interviewing? Like, oh my God, I love it. And it's like, of course you love it because you're good at it. But if you were sitting there for an hour and a half and questions weren't coming to you, you know, naturally on what to ask, and you weren't able to control a conversation, it was getting out of hand, you wouldn't enjoy it. You'd be like, oh my God, I can't wait for this to end. And I do think one of the reasons that you can, that we're like quite productive, and obviously we are, like, we're making, you know, big strides within the business. We love what we do, and that's simple. When I think you go, when you unpack it even just one level lower, it's, we do what we're really good at. And so you get up every day, you feel super productive. You're like, I'm useful today. I'm doing useful things that I'm good at. And you'll just keep doing more of it. It's human nature.
I think that's a brilliant way to look at it. Yeah. Too many people try to force themselves to be something they really dislike, whether it's a job or a career.
Definitely.
You really have to double down. When did you switch the model, Kat, then, from selling from other people to selling for yourself?
So kind of what happened was, I was selling for other people because I didn't think it was going to be a business. So that was easy. You know, why would I buy stuff in? Because it's more like just a hobby. And then I realized, like, people want, you know, Chanel bags. The people following me would buy them. But am I just going to wait around for somebody to finally decide that they want to sell their Chanel bag? And then they really have to dictate the price because I need the bag. And of course, the answer is no, I could just go out and start buying some pieces in. So I thought about it too long, you know, and you were talking about regrets earlier and mistakes, and definitely something I wish, and it's funny to say because I probably don't do it enough now, but I do wish I backed myself more earlier. I spent a lot of time thinking I couldn't do things, or thinking because I didn't have a qualification or because of my age that I couldn't do certain things. And even with that, with the buying things in, I knew it was right to do. Why didn't I just do it quicker? I don't know. I felt like, oh, but what if it never sells? What if I have it forever? And it was actually, my mom was like, sure, it would always sell for what you paid for it, and what's the worst that can happen? She's very laid back. And so I bought a first piece in, which was a very rare Chanel bag, but I got it at a good price. So I could sell it at a good price, but it was rare. It was a really cool piece, but it was also value. And like, it came in, I didn't even do a proper reel. I just said, look, what's just came in. Gone straight away. Yeah, gone.
To so someone in America, DM actually. You.
To purchase, DM to purchase. Yeah. So then I thought, oh, well, I need to get another one of these in. And for a long time, it was a mix of both, including when Killian came in full time. It was a mix of both. Now we're pretty much all buying stock in, for that reason I mentioned at the start of curation. Like, I love having control over the stock coming in because I really believe I know what people want. Maybe even if they don't know what they want, some people that aren't necessarily into style, but I know, right, even if you're not into bags, I know that if you want a bag, this is a really good one. So I'm going to make sure that I get that in stock as often as possible. Or I see something and I'm like, that's really rare. I know some people would love that, so I buy that in. And then I do take some pieces on consignment, but I do love predominantly buying. So consignment, like, if I consign something for you, you get paid when it sells. So I'm taking it off you and you get paid when it sells. But I really don't do it often anymore, because what I find is, you end up with a load of stuff. And obviously not everything is exactly what I want to stock or exactly what I want to sell. And it's just not ideal for the customer, and the customer is everything to me.
So what's your shop window then? Instagram?
Yeah, I would say Instagram. Yeah, Instagram is my favorite platform to share on. I love all of the different tools, especially the live shopping, but I love making reels as well. And obviously the messaging on Instagram is good too. So we have a website as well. The website is fab. We've only recently done it up and it's got great photos. But the main part of our business is that assisted selling, or learning about the piece that you're about to buy. So it's rare that people will just buy stuff online at that price point and something as personal as their everyday bag or the bag for the wedding that they're going to. They like a bit of advice. And I like also to have advised them so that I know that they're buying the right thing.
So Killian, you kind of have ambitious goals for this pod, or for this business. the figures are eye-watering, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like when I saw you guys pop up like 6 months ago, maybe on social, then came to see you in the pop-up, like, yeah, it's a big business.
It is. Yeah, see, obviously the figures are big, but we still operate really small. And I think that's what's led to it becoming a relatively big business. And one of the things, obviously, Kat talks about a lot, and she's already talked about it a lot today, and it's true, is like the customer's at the centre of absolutely everything we do. And we aim to service the customer, and that just takes care of everything else. So the ambition of the business is obviously for it to be a big business, but in its purest sense, it's just how do we deliver the most value we can to the customer. And if you do that at a global scale, which we hope to do, all the other big stuff kind of takes care of itself. So, yeah, that ambitious, yes, in the long term, but like every single day, it's still just how do we take care of our customer today, tomorrow, the next day? You know, do we have stock coming in next week?
What a heartwarming answer. Can you just give me the figures?
Okay, I'll give you the figures. What do you want? What figures?
Well, what's it doing? Like, you know, people listening going, oh, okay, designer handbags. How much, I don't know, like $2,000, $10,000? I don't know how much they make.
It's a vicious question to ask, but I'm going to give you.
Well, you dodged it the first time, so I had to come back a second time.
Yeah, well, look, in the interest of being transparent, but obviously we are, like, the business has grown, obviously, on the back of an amazing customer base. But to give an idea, like, of, you know, what we're looking at, obviously, last year we done just over €1 million in sales. That was double on the year prior. We done, I think it was in around 450,000 for 2023. And like this year, like as little ago as a month, we were like looking at kind of 4 million there, thereabouts. We'll probably tip over it by the end of the year in full transparency, being honest. Obviously, we done a pop-up last month that was wildly successful, where we have stuff in the works for the end of the year, similar kind of projects that will obviously add some additional turnover as well to our kind of forecasted e-commerce business. So yeah, we'll do north of 4 million this year in turnover.
Unreal.
And that's, it's 10x on 23. So we'll have 10x the bit. Like our run rate's already in excess of 4 million. So we've pretty much 10x the business in 18 months.
But I have big businesses that come in and they're not doing anywhere near that.
Yeah,
they're
I know.
Valued at 50 million, blah, blah, blah.
Sure, we've talked about it. It's...
Well, I'm trying to get you riled up.
I'm trying to stay cool. As a joke, and I'm saying it as a joke, one of Kat's biggest concerns is, you know, I come on and I get us cancelled. I'd say something wildly outrageous and, you know, Gary will snip it out and he'll put it out there and it'll go viral. Because I do have a good friend of mine, Kieran Walsh, who runs a very successful business. He calls them Killianisms, that I have these things I get fixated on. And definitely in the business.
Like what?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, yeah.
This LinkedIn. Could be its own podcast.
but definitely in terms of business, like, they all, like, portray themselves as, like, these big businesses. But, like, do they have customers? Like, do they have happy customers? And I know we bring it back to the customers, but, like, what leads to turnover is customers buying stuff off you. And it's, like, people are so obsessed with getting themselves out there and telling everyone, like, look how wonderful we are. They're not actually honing in on the customer and how wonderful the customer is, and the customer is willing to spend, you know, their hard-earned money with you. Like when you talk about our turnover, so yeah, we're going to do north of 4 million this year. Like that's 4 million euros out of people's earned money that they're going to spend with us. Like we take that ridiculously seriously. I mean, you've no idea. Like at the end of every day, Jack's on board now. My younger brother, he started working with us. At the end of every single day, literally 10:30 at night, we're in our living room, the three of us, and we're like, well, was there a customer today that wasn't happy? And why was he or she not happy? What went wrong? And we're constantly just trying to improve that process. And I think when I see all of these entrepreneurs and operators out there, and they're spending so much time just talking about what they're doing, it's like, when do you get the time to actually do it? You know, when you actually... at work, servicing your customer. I know there's been a lot of PR about Luxury Exchange. It's been out there over the last, you know, 5-6 weeks or whatever in the build up to the pop-up. Like before that, we spent 5 years doing absolutely nothing but servicing. Like that's literally all we did every single day. And when you see these businesses, they're pre-revenue. They don't even have customers. And they're out there, you know, giving it the big one. yeah, it kind of gets me going a little, as you know. That's why you've brought it up. But it is true. So, yeah, I know other people might look at what we're doing. They might see 4 million. And I think people don't realize how hard that is. Like, you know, to generate, like when they set off, and I know we talk about entrepreneurship, you and I, we just talked about it earlier over a coffee, and you've done a talk more recently about people that's currently working in a job and they want to like become entrepreneurs. And I don't think people realize like just how hard it is. I'm quite capable. Like I'm quite competent. I know I'm good at certain things. Kat's amazing. You know, she is the best salesperson I've ever seen. You've the two of us, we're working 100 hours a week, literally every week for 5 years, and we're doing 4 million in sales. Like, people throw that around now like it's nothing, you know, like, oh, 4 million, that's it. Like, you know, because they've all these tech bros or whatever.
Is it scalable though, Killian? Is it scalable?
Exactly. And I think that people just totally underestimate the workload involved. Like, it's vicious. And I wouldn't recommend it for anyone. Not if you want like work-life balance or any of that stuff, which they all, it's kind of like the reason people are going into entrepreneurship now. Isn't it great? My own boss, I dictate my own hours. It's like, I've never had less control of my life than I did when I left my job and started working in luxury exchange. Like, never. You know, you get emails coming in, it's 2 a.m. I mean, it literally doesn't stop. At least there's some courtesy in work. You know, there's like courtesy. But when you're dealing with customers and they're spending that kind of money, like, if they get on to you at 10 o'clock, you have to get back to them. Like, if it's midnight, you have to get back to them. Like, you can't wait around.
Well, I don't think everybody does. I think that's the difference, right?
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's the difference between success and failure. You know, oh, yeah, it'd be grand. We'll get back to you. And I got an email. I was a very minor customer thing I sent back in. They were like, oh, 3 working days. It was like, shit, wouldn't want to be urgent.
I know.
Yeah. And it was minor, so I didn't care. Yeah. But it was like 3 days. Just even psychologically, it was like, how does it take you 3 days just to reply to a customer query?
Another thing that we do that's very unique and, again, not scalable is like Kat gets back to every single DM herself. We get hundreds a day. Hundreds. That's not an exaggeration. And she will sit down on a night and respond to every single one of them herself. And when we say this to people, they're like, that's insane. Like, AI can do it. You know, I've been, you know, and I'm like, no.
You're going to get me started.
No, if you see how personal our response is, and like Kat knows her customers' daughters' names, and she can ask, like, you know, how is so-and-so doing? You know, it's her leaving cert this week. Is she nervous? And she's met the daughter. And there's this like personal touch associated with the business that people say, like, you know, isn't scalable, but I actually think the opposite. Like, when you talk about how you scale a business, it's customer acquisition. It's then, do those customers buy more and more off you over a period of time? CAC, LTV. And when you look at the fundamentals of our business, we're growing our customer base every single day. Every single day we acquire new customers. Every single year, those customers, literally over a 12-month time horizon, we have an 88% repurchase rate, which is just astonishing. Like, even when I speak with other people and they hear that, and obviously they think, oh my God, that's mental. I'm like, I know, but it is the case. And the reason that's the case is because we're doing the one thing that you're telling us not to do, which is get rid of that personal level of service. It's not scalable, but that's the one thing that we're doing that's setting us apart. And that's why they keep coming back and purchasing off us. So back to my previous point, because I'm doing a bit of a weave, is you acquire a customer. How often does that customer purchase with you? What's the LTV? And if you do that over a 10, 15, 20 year time horizon, which is the time frame we take with luxury exchange, and we've no interest in an acquisition, or like, this is our baby, like, we're doing this for the foreseeable. So when you take a 20 year time horizon on that, if every day we're acquiring new customers, if within a 12 month period, every single one of them purchases more than one thing at our, you know, current ATV, which is in excess of €1,000, you scale that over 20 years. We'll be sitting here in 20 years' time and it will be a behemoth of a business. There's no doubt about it. And it will be because we've done the one thing that everyone told us not to do, which is, what's Kat doing getting back to DMs? You can pay, you know, someone, whatever the figures they throw out there, 30 grand a year to, you know, get back to DMs. And now you can just get a bot to do it. It's like, well, that's the one thing we're not going to do. And I think long term, that's the one thing that's going to make us stand out as a business versus everyone else. Everyone's racing to what AI can do. And we're not, tech ignorant. My younger brother had just joined us as our operations manager. He just qualified from UCC with a computer sciences degree. He's in that space. He's interned at these tech companies. So we're aware of it. We're looking at it. But we're going the other way. And I think we're taking obviously a contrarian bet. But all, you know, excess profits is made by doing things that other people aren't doing. If you just do what everyone else does, you compete the profits away. But if you do something totally different, you know, that's where you can really carve out your own niche, your own diehard kind of customer base. So that's what we're doing. And obviously, you know, you've talked to me personally and Kat, like we are ambitious and we do have big plans for Luxury Exchange. And it's funny because if you hear like our business plan of how we're going to get there, people will say, oh, it's not scalable, you know, and it's just interesting. It is.
What's the plan, Kat?
For the future? Well, for me, I always ear to the ground on what the customer wants. So he'll like plan out the big plan. And then he loves looking into the future. I love working on the day to day. Right, rotting the deliveries today. Okay, I'm going live. I'm putting this into our Instagram broadcast channel, which is another platform we use a lot. And then if I'm hearing feedback from the customers, like, I loved your pop-up, or we love when you go live at 9 o'clock at night. That's the one that we got recently because it suits me really well. My job is to say, yeah, tonight we're going live at 9 and tomorrow night and the night after, because that's what the customers want. So that's really my role, is all about what the customer wants. And then I feed that back to him if it's relevant in the longer term plan. But I don't think too much about the future because I do work better as a day to day operator.
Okay, what's the big global plan?
Well, the big global plan, obviously we had just a ridiculously successful pop-up. Like it blew our wildest, and I mean our wildest expectations on what we thought we were going to do. And when we saw just the demand for what we were offering in person, like obviously we're an e-commerce business currently, 100% pretty much of our sales is done online, but definitely physical retail is in that long-term strategy. And I still think, and like Kat is a diehard retailer, it's in her blood, you know, her dad worked in retail his whole career. Like she gets it, she loves it. It's like a passion of us that we go into shops. I've joined a club where, you know, I didn't come from a retail background, so I'm learning on the go. But even now, Kat and I will go into a store and like we'll be talking about what's done well, what's not done well. And then we'll feed that back to her dad, and her dad will be like, yeah, you know, we've done that, we trial this. It's like physical retail is an obvious, you know, growth area for us, like without a shadow of a doubt. And then separate to that, like e-commerce is obviously going nowhere, and that live shopping is here to stay without a doubt. As we get busier, you know, people are kind of, you know, they're working from home, they're not traveling into cities, that's going nowhere either. You kind of have to blend to do together. And remember, like, you know, 95% of our turnover is still here in Ireland, which is a tiny player in the luxury space. Not only from like a population perspective, but also as a culture, we're not crazily into fashion compared to other countries. So you have to look kind of overseas, and we've already started trial testing some marketing in overseas countries. We're currently running some campaigns in France, in Spain, and they're going well. Like we're acquiring new customers every day from those countries. They're first order profitable. It allows us to double down and spend more. So we're starting to enter into new territories online, and then also physical retail. Do it all, basically. But when you give yourself 20 years, you can do it. You know, it sounds like when we say it there, oh my God, like you've it all going on. But we sit down and we're like, well, no, you know, let's take it steady this year. We'll do another pop-up maybe by the end of the year. We'll look at a physical retail store for next year. That'll be store one. Open up another one the second year, store two. In 20 years, you can have 20 stores, just taking it one store at a time. And then all of a sudden, you know, when you talk about, again, how expensive our product is, the turnover you can achieve per store is high. It's significant. It is of substance. And, you know, you've 20 of them on top of you keep doubling down on what you're doing online. Again, 20 years, you know, I think you're looking at a really big, really big business. You know, I really do. And again, I think people think I'm crazy when I always kind of saw the, from that day in Waterville, and I saw Kat selling and I saw the customers interact with her, and I was working in sales at the time. I know how difficult sales is. Like it's so hard to get someone to actually give you money that they've earned. Like it's not easy. And she's so good at it. And she's, and when I say good at it, I hate to say she's good at selling, but because it's not the selling bit, it's the just the customer journey. She cares so much about them. And I'm like, that is a real, like, we can scale this out if we just take Kat's attitude to every single thing we do. And then, like I said, you give yourself a long enough time horizon, 20 years, you know, you can do it all. Eat an elephant one bite at a time.
For sure.
Yeah.
You mentioned Kat can forecast culture.
Yeah. It's amazing.
What's happening?
I mean, it's freaky, Gary. It's freaky. Like, it really is freaky. She'll have said something like, you know, this matcha trend that's taking off at the minute where everyone is, you know, like buying matcha and is these matcha bars opening and like it's the thing. Kat was talking about matcha years ago. Years ago. I'd say three. You saw some video on TikTok during COVID and you were like, I'm telling you, matcha's a thing, like it's going to come round. And I know you'd Pat Phelan on the pod before. We're very friendly with Pat. And he talks about his strength being just being able to see like trends coming down the line. A trend is one thing because like it comes and it goes. But what Kat's really good at is actual like culture, like what's going to come and what's going to stay relevant. And she's made these calls like four or five times over on real like what's now big business. Like it's embedded in our culture. When I started working in Iron Mountain in 2020, this is pre-COVID, I could work from home. I didn't have to go into an office. They already had like a work from home policy in place. And I remember you saying to me, sure, that's a no-brainer. Like that's, everyone's going to work from home into the future, surely. This was January. It's obvious now, isn't it? Like, of course, yeah. She said it, you know, 5 years ago. And there's just been loads of examples like that. And I always, that's why Kat will come with, I'm telling you, this is going to be a thing. And then my job is not to even question it. It's okay, this is a thing, without a doubt. How can we be ready for it in, you know, 2 or 3 years' time?
So Kat, how do you pick between a trend and an actual cultural shift?
Well, what I would say is like, I'm not into trends at all. So I really just have the sense with culture, you know, and what's properly going to stick. And I think that all comes to what humans actually desire, what makes us feel good versus what we're doing to impress other people. So a trend might be, you know, a certain style of trousers, like barrel jeans. Some people will put barrel jeans on and they'll be like, these really suit me. Other people, it does nothing for them and they're just wearing them because it's cool. And they're not going to keep wearing them because eventually they'll look back on a photo and they'll be like, God, those jeans do nothing for me. Like skinny jeans are way better on me or straight leg jeans. So that would be more like a trend. Whereas I think with culture, it's like what really makes us feel good. And like when you're talking about the AI taking over, to me, like our whole lives, we've all wanted to be connected with each other as humans. And even people talk about kids today, and I think it's something people have really wrong where they're like, they're obsessed with their computer games and they won't want to talk to people. And in the future, they're all just going to put a headset on and not connect. But sure, then there'll be no kids born and we'll just totally go extinct. Like, that's not going to happen. People love connecting with other people. Even if you're an introvert, you'll have somebody that you really like connecting with and chatting to, or even just sitting with in the presence of somebody else. It's human nature. It makes us feel good. So like making somebody happier is always going to be the right thing to do.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's where things become kind of simple to me. That's how you look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think trends are, you know, they come up so fast and they're gone as quickly. And you see all these new businesses pop up and you're like, ooh, I don't know if that's actually going to sustain beyond 12 months. So I love that you're able to forecast culture. What do you see coming? I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you see coming in the next couple of years?
You have not. That's an expensive question.
Do I need a consultancy fee for Kat here?
Listen, that.
Well, I would just go back to what I did say, which is like, if you can have a business that makes people feel good, that actually, like, I mean, people do go on about how I'm a great salesperson, but I'm confident selling my product because I know it's a really good product and I know I'm giving really good value. And I know if I'm selling someone something from all the knowledge they've given me of them, I'm always going to recommend the right thing. So I know that person's going to be happy. It's a no-brainer, like, for them to buy it. So I don't nearly view it as a sale. It's just like I'm advising, this is the right thing for you, and what I'm providing you with is amazing value. So how can you not be happy? How can you not feel good? If you change your mind in the few years and you sell it back, I'll give you a good price for it. You'll be happy with that. Like, there's absolutely no reason not to shop from Luxury Exchange.
God, so I nearly want to buy a bag.
I have one here for you that I think will be perfect.
Michelle will love this.
But if you have a business that you can say that about,
yeah,
like you're trend proof, you're COVID proof, like you're everything, because how can the customer not want it? And how can you not be confident to keep showing it to them?
Oh, that's one of the most passionate and most engaging rationales I've had from a business owner, of like truly believing. Because sometimes you hear from people and you're like, oh, I don't even believe that. Whereas you truly passionate belief. What's happening in the luxury space right now then? You see all this turmoil in the world, tariffs and blah, blah. What's happening in the luxury space?
I would definitely define like the luxury space and the pre-loved luxury space is quite different. And I'm very much involved in the pre-loved luxury space. And I think the pre-loved luxury space, the people are quite savvy because there is a strong value point. But one thing I've noticed hugely since I started Luxury Exchange, and I know it's not just with Luxury Exchange, I know it's culturally as well all over the world. When I first started, it was all about the value. And I love the value aspect of pre-loved because, as I've mentioned, I work super, super hard. So whenever I spend my money, I like to know it's good value. But also you can buy something that nobody else can have. And I think as we're so public all the time, everybody with social media, and now you've these like, you know, AI influencers, and it's like everyone can have everything. But if you have something pre-loved that's from a certain year, and even if it's like it's got a certain patina to the leather, so it's got a certain color in a certain way, that's yours. And someone can say, oh, where'd you get that? I love it. They can't get it. Like, there may only be 200 in the whole world. And it's not that I'm going to put it up and say, yeah, I'm going to sell it twice the price that it is new because there's only a few hundred in the world. Try get it. I'm actually going to sell it probably for half the price that the new model is. But it's yours, and it's you're telling part of its story. And I've seen a big increase in people buying because something's different rather than it just being about the value. And we buy for that as well. Like, I buy thinking, this is so cool, this particular thing. Like, I've never seen that, and I might search it and there might be none for sale. And I think, yeah, if I can charge an appropriate price, yeah, I need to get that in.
So there's a story behind it. It's not just, oh, this is a 2004 or whatever.
And people are thinking about that rather than just the value. Now, value is huge for me and I won't lie about that. But there is definitely a group of people that could buy anything new and they're not, because you also go into a store. Like, we have a customer and she at the beginning would sell with me. She didn't buy, and she's a massive Chanel lover. She loves Chanel. And she bought a wallet on chain from me a couple of months ago now. And she just became addicted straight away, because she said, she goes into the stores now, what's on display is what's on display. That's what you can buy. If you want something else, come back next season and we'll see what we have. Every day I get new stock in, I show new stock. It can be from any season, any brand, going back to when the brand started. So anything could come up. And when you have it, that's yours and it's special. So in a sense, that part of it's priceless, but you're also getting good value, which everybody feels better if they know that they've gotten value.
Okay, this is just for the luxury fans. What's overrated in luxury and underrated in luxury?
Oh, I have my own opinion on this.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Well, Kat is going to give us a proper answer. You can give us yours first.
Botched answer. So I think massively, massively overrated is, am I going brand or style or what am I?
Yeah.
Anything you like.
Anything.
Okay.
Oh, the hate I'm going to get. Massively overrated, massively, is Rolex watches. Like, there is no scarcity. They produce, you know, 1.5 million watches every single year. They're everywhere. We're in wholesale chats. We can buy thousands of them at any moment in time. They are not rare. Don't fall for it. Totally overrated, without a shadow of a doubt. Massively. And then underrated, and I see you're wearing stuff today from Louis Copeland, as am I, is still real quality. Like, you know, and I think that's why Kat is also talks a lot about, like, these vintage pieces. They were made before these companies were massive corporations, before, you know, the bottom line was everything, before they had 90% gross margins on products. Like, these were handcrafted goods, you know, made by, like, family businesses back in the day that really cared about the product, really cared about, you know, the customer on the end of that product, getting something that was going to last them a lifetime. And I still think what's massively underrated is true quality. I'll give some brand. I'll give you an idea of what I mean by that. Vintage Chanel, vintage Chanel, vintage Hermes. And then in, like, the newer kind of brands, like Loro Piana makes just fantastic stuff. You go into Louis Copeland, I see there you're wearing one of their swag. It's like amazing quality. Really just try hone in on quality. And you feel better, you have it for years and years and years, like, you know, and that would be my advice. Overrated, I'll give a brand, Rolex, not rare, don't fall for it. We can buy thousands of them at any moment in time. They make over 1.5 million watches a year. Like, they are a machine all over the world. Every airport you fly into, you'll see some people wearing Rolexes. They're all over the place. Kat's looking at me like, stop talking, going to get us in trouble. But it's the truth. And then underrated, it's still people don't hone in enough on quality, real quality.
Perfect. That'll bang on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
Kat, you can give us a more thoughtful answer. Now.
Yeah, well, my overrated is...
I thought a lot about my answer.
My overrated it's a bit aggressive, similar to his. And it's people, like, saying to me, oh, you know, I went into this store, that store. I don't know if I should name the stores. This store, that store. And they offered me this bag. And I got it. And, like, what will you pay? Will you pay €500 more for it? And then you can sell it for €1,000 more than what I paid. I hate the idea that you go into a store with your money that you've worked for and they dictate, and it's kind of similar to what you said about people waiting for watches, but they dictate what you can and can't buy. And they're like, if you buy a few of these keychains you don't want that we sell for 1,500, we might let you buy a bag that's 4,000.
How lucky are you?
Hang on. This bag is 4,000 euro that I earned. What do you mean if I buy this, I can get that? We went into a store in Paris and I really wanted to get a pair of shoes that are very, very hard to get pre-loved and typically sell for, like, around the price that they are new. So we were in Paris. It was just after the pop-up and I was like, I'm going to get myself something now and it'll be like my pop-up thing. Go into the shop. I'm like, yeah, this is what I want. I actually know what size I am. And the person comes up. There's people everywhere standing around, staff. And she comes up and she's like, I would say sales assistant, but wait for it. And she's like, what can I help you with? I said, I really want to buy these shoes. I actually want this exact color. And I know my size is a 38 because I've tried them on before. Okay, so I'll get you a sales assistant. It'll be about an hour and they'll be able to assist you with the purchase of the shoes. Do you want to sit down over there? And I was like, no, I know that these are the ones I want. Like, if you could get them from the stockroom, I'll just buy them. And they were a ridiculous price. I'll be honest, they were maybe €1,000. And she said, yeah, but all of our sales assistants are busy right now. And maybe, and this is where I say pre-loved luxury and luxury differs. Maybe I don't get what they're doing, but I'm like, but why are loads of people then standing around that aren't sales assistants? Can you not work the till and put the sale through for me? But it's all this thing. And I put it up on my own page and people said, oh, you know, that's them trying, you know, it's the luxury. And I said, there's no luxury in me sitting down waiting an hour to spend €1,000.
I'd pay more to get out there quicker.
Well, we just left. Like, we just left.
I would never do that. And when people come to me, and even I have a customer and she was like, yeah, I was waiting for a black type of a model of bag. I was waiting 6 months and they told me that they give me the burgundy. So I bought the burgundy.
Wow.
And I'm just like, but, I mean, this bag is €3,600.
So what is that, Kat? Are they trying to create scarcity? Are they trying to create this FOMO mentality of, like, oh, you got to be on the waitlist and blah, blah, blah?
They're nearly trying to make people feel like they're not good enough. And if they can get this product, they're good enough. Because, it might work on different people, I guess, because I know, like, the stuff comes into me every day. So when I'm told I have to wait an hour for a pair of those shoes, I'm like, oh, I will. Yeah, I'll see you later. whereas other people might think, oh, yeah, because those shoes and they're so rare and they're this and they're that. And I'll wait an hour and they'll give me the color I want. And I couldn't do that. And I think it's majorly overrated. Like, if you are going in somewhere with money, they are lucky to get it out of your pocket and into their till. And if they don't act like it, I'm sorry, but they don't deserve the money.
Love it.
They don't.
Yeah, some of these companies are publicly traded businesses. You know, you can go on to LVMH and look at their financials, and the gross margins would just astonish you. Like, the sheer margin on their product is, it's obscene. It's obscene. And it is very slick, and they're so slick at creating this kind of illusion that these things are rare, and like, they are not rare. You know, they're really not, for the most part. Like, we are in like group chats where we can buy thousands of these things at any moment in time. Are they nice? Of course they're nice, but they're not rare, and don't be fooled into thinking that they are rare, because they're not. And definitely a thing that like Kat and I pick on a lot is the experience you get when you go into these stores. You called into our pop-up. I hope you had a good time. But the whole experience we were trying to create is, you come in and like, we are so damn thankful that you took time out of your day to come into us today. Like, you know, nearly a hug when you walk in the door. Like, thank you for coming in. It means so much to us that you took the effort to do it. You go into these luxury stores now, and you know, like, the look they give you when you walk in, if you're not like dressed appropriately, or you know, if you don't look like you're about to spend a load of money, like the look of like disdain of, what are you doing in my shop? It drives us nuts. And when you're on, you asked earlier about like growth. Obviously, I gave you like an answer on retail, but to go a level deeper and unpack that, it's friendly luxury, friendly retail,
I
think, is a huge opportunity. Where you go into a store and you're actually spoken to like a human being, and we appreciate your customer, appreciate your business. Like the experience you get when you go into like a Louis Copeland. To be fair, a lot of the small retailers, you still get that experience. But I think there's an opportunity to do that at scale, where you are just diligent, and the training is provided, and your staff is first class, and they treat everyone with respect. And when someone comes in, they get a hello, they get a goodbye. Thank you for coming in. You know, you're not trying to just sell something to someone, and if they don't want to buy, like, you don't look at them. You're there, a customer for life kind of attitude. There's a huge opportunity there. And we talk about it a lot, because the experience we get, because we go into these stores, we travel a lot. When we're in these cities, we'll go into different stores, just see what they're doing. I'll tell you what, Gary, like, the experience is not good. Like, it's and when your cat goes back, she talks a lot about culture, and the way she forecasts culture is based on human nature. We don't like this. We put up with it. And I know these businesses are successful. They have customers. People fall for it, if you want to. But over the long term, and like we were talking about that 15, 20 year time horizon, I don't think people are going to put up with it. Like, they're going to eventually wake up. And I think it's already started to happen. We have customers coming to us that would have historically, big customers, bought things new inside in these stores. And even they're saying, I'm just sick of the way I get treated when I go in there. I like buying from you guys. You appreciate my business, which we do. No matter how much you spend, like, we appreciate it so much. And I think that there's a huge opportunity to scale that out and actually just deliver for your customer. It all goes back to delivering for your customer. Yeah. I think over the long term, you just can't get away with it. There's a guy I follow online, I followed him for years, Dave Ramsey, you may not have come across it yet. And he has a saying, service profit, and you will always worry about profit. Service your customer, and you will never worry about profit. And that's the kind of the ethos we have, where like, the customer journey is everything. And I think there's a huge opportunity to build out a better customer journey in physical retail. Huge.
You mentioned, and Killy mentioned as well, your dad was retail all his life.
Yeah.
What was the one major lesson you took from him watching him growing up?
A big lesson I saw, and that made it very easy for me to live, was that if you want to do, there's genuinely so much. I'm going to kind of tie two into one. If you want to do serious things, you have to be serious about life. And that's one thing that I might expand on in a sec. The other is that if you want to do great things, it's not going to fit into a 9-to-5 schedule. So he was, you know, working technically in a job, and that he wasn't like an entrepreneur, but he had these huge jobs, and he was and is amazing at what he does. It's not 9-to-5. Most of my childhood, he was living in Dublin. We were living in Cork. He was working the whole time that he was in Dublin. He'd come home on the weekend and literally still be the best dad ever. And if someone needed to take a call, or if somebody's, you know, aunt passed away and the funeral was in the middle of nowhere, not in Dublin, not in Cork, he'd be there. He'd answer the call. And it wasn't, have to do this work thing now. It was just standard practice. And I also, like my mom, it was always, oh, it's great, you know, he's working so much. It was never a case of he's up in Dublin working, I'm here with, you know, with you guys. And she was always impressed and gave gratitude to how much he worked. So it was always something that was really encouraged. And I saw, because he's really, really, really smart, but he still works that much. So nothing just takes care of itself. And in terms of the taking life too seriously, and something I had in my head, I really want to mention here again for anybody maybe like me who's young. And I do think that this is particularly based on women. The amount of people that will say to you, if you're young and you're trying to do something, that you're working too much, or that you take life too seriously. I really don't know why people feel like they can say that in the first place, especially if maybe if your parents want to say, like, do you need a rest? That's different because they're your parents. But if this person that you're sitting next to at a wedding decides to tell you that you're so young, you're not living your life, I could not be happier in my life. And it's an amazing thing to be able to say. I could not feel happier or more fulfilled when I get up on a day. But I've always taken life incredibly seriously. Everyone is different and not everybody should take life so seriously. But if you want to do something big and you want to do something serious, you do have to take life seriously. And you have to work really, really hard if you want to have your own business at a scale like Luxury Exchange, rather than, you can obviously have a lifestyle business as well. That's different. And I'm not talking about that. But the people that come and they don't know you and they're not necessarily doing what you want to do. And they're saying you're working way too hard. You're only in your early 20s. Go out and live. I think half the time what they mean is go out and drink a load and go party. I don't want to do that. I love what I do. And I'm so happy. And I'm thankful God that I never listened to anybody like that. And I do want to say that here because it's massive, especially when you're, I think when you're a young woman, people, they don't want to see you working that hard.
Why?
Because I think the reason it's worse for women is we are kind of used to men working a lot. And then it's a newer thing, not just in my generation, but it is a newer thing of women working and women saying, I'm going to set this up. And people don't like it, men and women, and other women don't like it. Exactly why, I don't know. I don't know the psychology of it, but I know very, very much so that it's true. And I've had people that are in no position to be saying it to me, tell me I work too hard. And as I said there, thank God that I didn't listen to them and I just kept working harder.
I love it.
It is true though. And obviously, like, we do take life like very serious. And I've done, I sent you over a bio before we got on the pod, like I met Kat in August 2017, never had a job. I was 19 years of age. I was just bombing it around, like doing nothing with my life. And obviously I met Kat, met her dad. Her dad's an absolute G, very impressive. I knew that if I was going to keep hold of Kat, I better like up my game. And like from that day forward, I took every single thing, I mean everything, seriously. Like nothing was done in half measure. And just the total, like, end result of our life since, like, people look at us now and obviously we're relatively young, we're doing A-OK, we, you know, obviously we're doing well enough compared to most, like, whatever, but it's because it's not by accident, like, we sacrificed. And I do think there's, you'll have come across him, I'm sure, Alex Hormozy, who I like for some things, I don't like for other things, but he has a famous quote where he says, 30 isn't the new 20, it's just an excuse to take 10 years longer to achieve your goals. And I do think that's true. And I know you're laughing and people laugh when I say it, but like we're proof you can do it. Like if you apply yourself at a young age and you get serious and you get focused and you don't just, you know, piss your 20s away, like doing nothing of substance, but you actually have a plan. You look at people and like, again, I met Kat and Kat's dad obviously done well. And I remember that was my first like eye opener to God, like people from like Cora can actually live this kind of life. You know, they had a nice place down in Spain, they had a holiday home in Kerry. I was like, and he's here from Cork, like he's done it. And you can do it, but you just need to get serious. And so few people are serious about anything they do now. And it goes back to this like balance, and it's all balance. And I get that. But how about like on balance, you just want to have a serious life. And, you know, you're ambitious and there's nothing wrong with that. And I do think we get shot down a lot for like having ambition and, you know, wanting to do something that's like memorable. And yeah, I like, just don't let anyone tell you that we've heard it our whole lives. Like, you're joking. The amount of times people have said
I also think some people have a fear to do things because of the fear of failure, which has really come on with social media, because you do something and everyone sees straight away. You can't go and do something in secret because you need customers, so you're going to put it up. And maybe the place that it comes from is like, if people feel like they were scared to do something in case it fails, and now maybe they don't want you to do as much work on your thing in case it doesn't fail. Definitely, it's a really weird phenomenon, like people saying that, getting in on your business, trying to stop you doing what you're doing. And one thing I will say, it was never anybody that was very, very close to me said that. It was always people that don't really know me on the outside. And I do think, why did they want me not to do that? Maybe it goes back to that they had an idea themselves that they didn't do because of the fear of failure, which is a real thing.
I ask a question, what's the best bit of advice you get? What's the worst bit of advice you've ever got?
To not work as hard. You can't work hard enough.
It's interesting though. I've had the pleasure getting to know you guys over the last couple of months. You're serious people, but you don't take yourself seriously.
No,
it's that's two different
things. The motto I live by is like, take what your craft seriously, but don't take yourself seriously.
No.
Don't be putting yourself up on a pedestal. I think it's striking. It's really interesting to hear you say that, Kat, there, that bit you spoke there about being serious. It's refreshing to hear that because people are afraid to actually say what they mean anymore.
Yeah.
They're afraid of people not liking it.
I'm in school because I have a point to make on that and I think it's relevant.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you what it is. So obviously you hear, the reason people now think it's like a-okay to not take yourself like seriously is because they'll have heard successful people say, don't take your life too serious and all the rest of it. Where am I going with this? I know for a fact you've had people on this podcast and people that you'll have on this podcast into the future that will come on and say, you know, work-life balance, don't take life too serious and all the rest of it. And when you speak with them privately, that is not what they do. You know, be very careful, you know, what you hear online. Now, you do a good job, in fairness, I'm not just saying it because you're in front of me, at getting the truth out of people. But there is so many times I've listened to friends of mine or, you know, friends, people that I know on a personal level, go on the podcast and say one thing, and like, I know for a fact in private, it's the complete opposite. And anyone that comes on here that's, you know, has their life together in a real way, like a good family life, good relationships with other people, because that's hard. Like, if you want to have a real good relationship with someone else, that takes work, and anything kind of work related is serious. To have good relationships, a good business, you have to really apply yourself in all those domains to be successful. And application, you know, is a serious thing because it is like you're sitting down, you're doing the work, whatever it may be. And just something I just want to put out there, just be very careful. Like when you listen to these people that will say work-life balance and it's like you're running, you know, 100 million euro a year business. Like I know what you do in the back and I know it's no balance. Like you're working 24/7. So just be careful because what's put out there is not always what they're actually practicing in their lives. And they're doing it just because it's, you know, a hot thing to say and it sounds good on camera and it makes other people feel good about themselves. And yeah, so just be careful.
Yeah, it's tricky because you have to, that's why I do long form.
Yeah.
Because in short form, you can get really good sound bites.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, on paper it does. But if you talk to someone for like 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 2 hours, and you get to know them a little bit more, I can always tell within the first 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Genuinely, whether someone's going to be real with me or not.
Yeah.
I can always tell and kind of go, you're PR'd within an inch of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
You're afraid to say anything. And listeners know.
Yeah.
I get feedback going, good interview, good business. Your man's a bit of a dose though.
Yeah.
Like people will literally DM me that and go, yeah, good business, but like they're hard to take.
Yeah.
Because people know. Like there's the people's bullshit radar is up there.
Yeah,
like people should tell,
especially
in Ireland. We're cynics anyway.
We are good at it.
Like. Oh, would you listen to your man?
Yeah.
But genuinely, people are.
Yeah.
People know. So like you're not fooling anyone.
Yeah, and especially if they've done it, you know, like a lot of your listeners, they're entrepreneurs. They're, you know, some of them have really made it on a big scale and they'll know you can't do it with work life. But there is no balance. Unless, like, again, you and I joke about, is there something we don't know? We see these things online and, you know, it's like, God, I'm doing the complete opposite. Should I be doing that? And is there something I don't know? But I'm yet to meet someone and I'm very grateful, both Kat and I, that we've accessed like some really successful people. and I'm yet to talk to them about their work. And obviously, this is a business podcast, so we'll talk about it in a business sense. I'm yet to talk to them about their work, and they're not like all in on their work. Like, it is so serious. And obviously, Kat talks about her dad, same thing. He was a great dad. He'd come home. But even I saw, like, I lived in the house for a period when I first met Kat. And if it was 10 o'clock on a Saturday night and her dad needed to take a phone call, like, he'd just leave the living room and go take the phone call, and it's 10 o'clock at night. And I do think that people need to be told, like, that's okay.
I never felt understood, like, and it's my favourite podcast ever, and it's you and Amy Connolly. And you say to her, what about balance? And she says that there's no balance. Yeah. But it's not like there's no balance, poor me. It's like there's no balance because I'm doing what I love and it's so a lot of hard work. I've listened to that maybe 5 times and I could nearly cry every time I hear it because it's so honest and it's so true. And I'm just grateful that she said that because it's really, really true.
I talk about this all the time on the pod, like see it to be it. You've both mentioned loads of examples throughout your lives. Like, it's so bloody important. That's why I kind of like doing the podcast, because not everyone has access to these people.
Yeah,
but through doing this, they do.
Yeah.
They can kind of go, oh, technically they're now my mentor because I can listen to them on the pod and I can listen again and go, okay. And I like to think of people like they might revisit it going, it's not relevant to me now, but in 6 months I'm going to go back and listen to the guys again because I'm kind of there now. I'm having that problem with whatever. Like, there's so many lessons within this podcast for people. What would you like in the next, like, 5 years? We've kind of talked long-term, kind of long-term, but in the next 5 years, when we're sitting down, say 2 years, right? We're sitting down again in 2 years. What would you like to have happened?
Are you talking pure business? Or... yeah, okay.
Open-ended. Yeah. Talk about life and the meaning of it if you like.
Hopefully Kat and I will be after getting married and we'll have gotten around to getting
gotten
married.
Gotten around to it.
Because obviously we got engaged in September and we had just had
that. That proposal was...
that was pretty good.
I looked through that. Yeah, I was that's a baller proposal.
Yeah, that was... I took it very seriously.
Clearly.
I know people joke since. There was a handful of people involved, like, that knew what was going on, and they'll attest to just how serious I took that. That was a 12-month operation. Like, I scoured the internet to see where the hell is, like, am I going to propose to Kat? Where no one I know has done it. Obviously, you can not take a shot at anyone over to the Eiffel Tower. There. Like, no, this has to be special. And I took it very seriously. And I got the reward. A cat was thrilled. Like, I can't believe, you know, you took all that time to plan this. Like, that means so much to me.
Go on, tell us quickly what happened.
Yeah, okay.
On, quickly, but, tell us.
Yeah, so...
Because people are like, what did he do? What did he do?
Oh, well, what I did, if you notice Summit Building in New York, One Vanderbilt, it's like a really famous building in New York. I rented out the whole top of it, which is not easily done. Like, it took a bit of planning. And then the dates is very complicated. So you need to work out... you know, you need to be in touch with them because obviously there's limited availability. It was a bit of a hassle. I got there in the end, but basically the whole, if you've ever been to Summit in New York, which I'm sure some of your listeners would have been, the top 3 floors, totally empty, just Kat, myself and our photographers. We got up there. It went well. She said yes.
But did you know what was happening?
No, not at
all. Not a clue. Definitely
because
not.
We've been together a long time, but I was 24 then, wasn't I? Yeah, 24. I'm 25 now.
Yeah.
And he kind of always said, because they obviously were together ages, and I'm not somebody that would be like, when are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? Very much kind of do our own thing alongside each other all day, but doing our own thing. And he would kind of say in passing, oh, you know, when you're 26 or 27, like that's when I'll do it. And I'd say, yeah, okay, cool. Like I wouldn't be saying, I want this ring and I want it like that and I want this kind of thing. So I had no idea. Even when I saw the photographer, he said to me, oh, we're going for a photo video experience. And
clever.
I thought it was like, you know, when you're on the top of the Eiffel Tower, there's photographers and they're like, yeah, and we'll get a photo. So the photographer was like, look out and we'll get a photo. So I was like, yeah, this is normal. Like I've had that on the Eiffel Tower.
And you're from the content world as well.
Yeah,
like,
I was like, yeah,
gold,
yeah.
Gold.
Is there a mic? Yeah.
Can we do a quick live?
Yeah. Can we go live? So I literally, till I turned around and saw him, I did not have a clue.
It was kept well under wraps.
Yeah.
So within the night, I hope that we get around to getting married. Because again, I take that serious, you know.
Hold on now. Do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah.
Come on. Take some of your own medicine now.
In 2 years, we'll have had our wedding.
There we go.
Been married. You've booked it. So So hopefully we will get around to getting married, because again, we take that seriously. I take family. I come from a big family, close family, so does Kat. It's very important to us. So hopefully we will get married within 2 years, and then we'll have opened up our first couple of luxury exchange stores. Like I said, we'll take it slow. Everyone has to be perfectly right. One a year, we'll go to the location and live there wherever we're opening that store. Make sure the staff knows, you know, how you treat your customer, et cetera, et cetera. So from a business perspective, that would be the goal. And then obviously we're also looking at doing a couple of other, like, you know, big kind of pop-ups all around the world as well in the next couple of years. And we're actively working on that in the background. So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Kat, you on board?
You better say a wedding
Yeah. Well, I agree with all of that, because from the business perspective that you were talking about, like, I just want as many happy customers as possible. That's the truth. And my current customers also to stay happy as it grows.
Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global.
Okay, quick fire round. What book has made the most impact on you, or what book should every founder read?
Can I give three? Because I have three.
Absolutely.
Yes, I see Kat's laugh. I don't follow any of the route. Like, this is the reason school didn't work out. I go Principles by Ray Dalio, an amazing book. 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel, another like fantastic book. Again, he talks about, you know, finding like a niche space and don't compete because competition, you eat profits away. Like 0 to 1 would be number one. And then also No Rules Rule by Reed Hastings, the founder of Netflix, is another fantastic book.
I haven't read that one, actually.
It's really good. Mm. It's about like radical transparency, just progress being the goal, irrespective of how you get there. How do we get better? How do we move like faster? And just constant compounding of progress. And that basically, if you put too much restrictions or rules in place, it hinders it. It doesn't enable it. It's a fantastic book, especially for, you know, if you're just like in the early stages of a business, like not to get too kind of corporate-y, just really hone in on progress. So they'd be my three.
Kat?
Mine's quite a simple book, but it's for people like that don't have corporate experience or business degrees, but are going into business as a founder. And it's just called How Business Works. And it's a really simplified book. And it basically gives you a little bit of an overview of everything and what everybody does. And it means that if you're talking to people, or like, it's been really helpful for me, I keep it, the hard copy, at home, and I look at it all the time. As we start to get other people on board, I at least know what they're doing. I don't need to be able to do it, but I know what they go off and do. And I know when I'm talking to other people, like what their company might look like. So I just found it a really good book. I've looked over it like a good few times, and you can resort back to it. But if you've no business or corporate experience or degree or qualifications, it's kind of a handy one to just feel like you have a bit of a knowledge of what everybody's doing. It's quite a simple book, but effective.
I know you both listen to the pod, and I normally ask, what have you sacrificed for your success? But I'm actually not going to ask you that because I think I know the answer. Nothing. What's your superpower? Brand new question, debuting right here.
Well, we talked about it. Yeah, only this
morning. You kind of hinted to that earlier.
Yeah, you hinted at that.
Now I'm realizing.
I do think, I hate this question because what's your superpower? Like, you've set it up where you sound like arrogant coming across. I do think I've like very, very, very good instincts. I just know, and like I've done things in the past where people have said that's mad, like that's not what you should do, and I just know that it is what I should do, and nearly every time I've been right. And even when I meet with people who's clearly, you know, from an intellectual perspective, smarter, we'll talk about a situation or something, and they'll give me an answer like pure from a like analytical perspective, and I just sit there and I'm like, you're wrong. I don't know why, but I know you're wrong. And I think, yeah, nearly every time I'm proven to be right. So I think instincts is probably something that I have a real competitive advantage on over others.
I would say that mine is communication, like communicating either privately with customers and messages, or also the way that I can communicate through the internet, through the different platforms. I think that would be my communication.
You're seeing me experiment, you see.
Yeah.
This is behind the scenes. Because this, the next evolution, we'll have you back and you'll do a whole pod on your superpower. See? Got to keep iterating, got to keep moving it forward. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
10, so you've upped to 10. Whoa. One.
No, there's two questions.
Wow.
What would you do with 10 and who would you invest 1 million in?
Oh, okay,
so what would
okay,
I do
okay.
with 10 and who I'd invest 1 in?
Yeah, company or person for the 1. But first of all, I give you 10 million euros today, 10 for Kat, 10 for you. What are you doing with that money?
I was given 10 million euros today. Well, and this isn't just a bullshit answer. This is the truth. So we're both big on like charity. Take 10% straight away. It's a fantastic foundation that Kat and I both support. It's, they look after street dogs in Thailand. I don't know if you come across it, but it's a
Niall Harrison.
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I give him $1 million without a doubt. And then I take the other 9 and I'd like begin our progression of opening up stores. So we're very conservative with the business. We've no debt. We cash flow everything, totally bootstrapped. Literally not a cent is owed at any institution. So what hinders our growth always is I make sure the money is in the bank before we do anything. So if I take that 9 million, I double down in Luxury Exchange, off we go. We'd start opening up the retail stores straight away.
Yeah, I was laughing because I have so many direct debits going to Niall Harrison.
Well, it's not a joke. I take that because we love him, but my God, it is.
I just, you know, I go to donate and then it's like, do you want to make this a recurring donation? And I'm like, well, of course I do.
But he is amazing. I don't know, do you follow what
I do.
He got, but like,
to
in
be
all
honest,
seriousness.
I followed him for a long time.
It's incredible.
To see his evolution as a person and as a business person and as like a social entrepreneur, I guess you'd call him, is unreal.
Yeah.
I'm a big dog fan. Like my, when I'm working at home, I'm sitting at a desk like this, my guy is underneath my foot.
You can.
All day, every day. All day, every day. He's literally my shadow. I get up in the morning, he's there.
Oh, they're the best. So that's
the
what
love
I do.
Is just amazing.
I give him one, and I would, like, we're big, we're both people of faith, so I believe in giving back. I give him $1 million, and then I take the other 9 and double down on what we're currently doing.
Kat?
Yeah, I'm the same in that if I start on the dog charities, it doesn't end.
Yeah,
that is my.
All away.
But I would definitely, with some of it that I haven't donated, I would open up a shop first in Dublin because that's where most of my customers are and have always been, and then look to elsewhere.
I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can only invest it in one person.
It is one person. Are you sticking to
one person or one company?
That's a killer.
No, because mine was involving different people.
How many?
Can I give 2?
Two. You're going to do what you want anyway, so fine.
Okay, two. Like, so I have 2
what
people.
What can I say, no?
Yeah, I have 2 people who was like, I think, generational entrepreneurs. I know them both privately. They're both amazing. They're both from an area in Cork where you'd think there's nothing happening. But I go Kieran Walsh of National Beauty Distribution. And I know you know Kieran, but I'll give you a guy you probably had never heard of, Paul Buckley of C2O Group. Guy from Cork, moved over to Australia, building a behemoth C2O, look into him, and they grew up, Kieran and Paul did, as friends in North Cork from an area like Kanturk Mallow, very rural, not much happening there, and they, like, obviously Kieran, who you know, but Paul is a generational talent as well. He really is he is building a monster in Australia and around that part of the world. And just gets no love here in Ireland. Like, and I know you talk about people that's actually building like real businesses, and you know they're not in the kind of sphere where they're getting much PR, and the people that might not be doing as much are getting all of it. This guy is building a massive, massive business. It started it from scratch like 5 years ago. I don't want to give away it, but like it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars of turnover down in Australia. Cork guy in his 40s, like a machine.
Class.
So those two lads are just incredible.
I have to kind of, and I'm doing, this is like what you've been doing, but I do need to kind of twist your question because I have a WhatsApp community that I told you about called Founders, and there's amazing people in there. And also just in general, I think that I'd have to split it up and give maybe 100,000 to a few I won't call everybody out, but like in Founders, we have a girl, Tara Gartland. She makes chocolates, gluten-free. They're literally works of art. And also as much as they're amazing, she had these Easter eggs. They sold out, and I think they were 76 euro or something like that, an Easter egg. So from a sales perspective, I'm not a chef, but I am a chocolate connoisseur, then they're delicious. But also to have that skill to be able to say to your customers, you know, it's worth it, but it's also a 76 euro Easter egg, and I'm gonna, and you're gonna buy it. We also have amazing jewelry designers like Love Beth, which is Beth Houghton. And then we also have our friend in Cork, Andy O'Sullivan, who's opening barbershops.
His head is going to explode.
I had to say him because, like, he's Killian's friend for a long, long time. And
since
I'm just
we were
like,
three.
He is such a hard worker.
Did he give you that trim?
Yeah, he did.
He is such a hard worker. Content, the way that he plans things, the way that he takes risks. But like you often say on this podcast, it's not just like a risk because you don't really care. It's a calculated risk and you know that this could be worth it. I look at him and the things he does, and he moves kind of similarly to me, where he is a bit conservative, but maybe it's because he actually needs to just believe in himself more because he has all of the skills. And okay, maybe 500,000 of it would have to go to him because I think he's unbelievable.
What's his business?
He has barbershops and he's just opened his second one, but he also has an academy and even things like that. So he has the shop, but he's like, you know, I'm going to train these people, and then the really good people I'm going to have work for me.
This guy's incredible. Like, I'm actually tearing up because very close friend of mine, but like
he's amazing.
Yeah, he is.
And like, I do think, and why I wanted to break it up, and I'm sorry, but I think some of these people go totally underrated. And even when I was writing to you, I was saying about like how when I was working in Brown Thomas, some people say, oh, it's a menial role, like, you know, working in a shop or own, you know, oh yeah, he owns a barbershop. It's not a massive tech business. Well, I'll tell you, because I sold a handbag here and there through Instagram with no website, that don't underestimate what these things can amount to once the right person is running them. He's an incredible guy.
Yeah, Andy, and we'll give him a little shout out. You'll give me 60 seconds because he is amazing. He's my best friend since we were 3 years of age, literally sat next to each other in junior infants, been in touch ever since. And he won't mind me saying it because it's publicly known, but like, his dad committed suicide when he was a teenager, like given nothing, like absolute. And his dad was the nicest guy I've ever met still to this day. Obviously, school wasn't his thing. Started cutting in like a log cabin out the back of his house when he was 15 years of age. Just get money in, like anything, get money in the door. Started like chopping away in the log cabin out the back of his house. He now has two barber shops inside in Cork, busy, like one in the centre of the city right next to the university.
What are they called?
It's called Andy Sol's Hair. But he's like, when you're on about like an ab, like he has been given nothing. Like, I've been tremendously like lucky in my life, you know. I've had helps along the way from people I met. Kat, like, her dad has been amazing as a mentor. Like, from I've had so much advantages. This guy was given nothing, like a really, really tough hand, and it's just incredible. And like, as you, I'm telling you, Gary, in 10 years time, this guy will have 30 or 40 barbershops around the country, and he'll be like a known, because he has it, like he, whatever it is, when you're on about instincts, like, I've tried investing in his business. I've tried, he won't take money off me. Like, I've tried loads of times, and like, let me come on, like, let me get involved. But he's
world
class.
You could keep giving, he's the kind of person, like, you can just keep giving him reasons to stop or to say no, or that life is this, life is that. And he just doesn't. He is unbelievable. I had to say him, yeah.
It's a ringing endorsement. We'll clip that and we'll play it again in 5 years when Andy's not.
Hopefully
I'm a shareholder.
If you were starting from zero again in 2025, what would you build?
I would do luxury exchange. Like, no question of it. And you know, I was talking about how I'm so happy, and it's a great thing to be able to say, I feel like I was born to do exactly what I'm doing right now. So I wouldn't change a thing.
Killian?
Yeah, obviously luxury exchange, but just for the for interest, I'll give like another generic answer. Anything in the physical experience, like space. I like I said, I'm kind of taking the opposite approach. I don't all think we'll be in our rooms all day with glasses on. I just don't think that. My instincts is telling me that this, you know, the same, look, we've heard this for years, you know, about AI taking over the world and all the rest of it. Obviously, there's going to be very productive tools that we're going to use for work. But I think humans on a personal level are still going to want experiences with other human beings. And I think if you can create something of an experience that I'd be really, and like Kat and I've talked privately, it's something we're both interested in. I think we'll be able to blend luxury exchange like with a physical experience.
Sure.
Come in, it won't just be a shop. We'll have other stuff going on there. To give you an example of kind of the flavour I'm talking, if you ever come across the brand Kith?
No.
An amazing brand. Look into it after the podcast.
Was that the brand you put up in Paris?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I saw it. It looked incredible.
You go into one of his stores and it's like a real experience. You go in and they bring you through a journey and there's a really cool cafe and you can get anything in there from like golf clubs to a suit. Like there's really, it's all luxury. It's all very high end. And he's pre-loved vintage stuff. He's new stuff. You go in there and you could just spend hours in the stores and they're real. Like he hasn't just put 100 of these all over the world. Like he's like Paris, Tokyo, New York, real tastefully done. And you go into the store, like they are packed, like absolutely packed. And the tills are ringing.
Spell that for me.
It's K-I-T-H. Yep.
Kith.
Look into it. When you're on about culture, like this guy is the king. He knows exactly. He's 10 years ahead of whatever's coming down the track.
Yeah.
He's amazing. So that's an example of kind of, we could combine.
That's someone we take a lot of inspiration from.
And I think you can combine like luxury exchange and like that kind of real physical into one, you know.
Whole lifestyle experience.
Like you can go in and there's watches for sale for, you know, obviously the men and women. But like that, you might have a second car. You know, a vintage Ferrari for a
car. You love saying,
I know everyone gets on to me. Listen, I don't know, but Kieran Walsh, who, you know, like I talk a lot about this with him. And I sent him on a ChatGPT, like image generation image of this like concept that I have in my mind. I just think, why can't you just go into like a really cool place and there's like a vintage Ferrari for sale? And then there's also a Chanel bag. Harrods is starting to do it. I saw they've got Tom Hartley, who's a really cool like vintage car dealer in the UK. He's a little set up in Harrods now. But I think you could do that, just make it even cooler again, you know, and just, it's vibey, like there's music going.
And
you
it's might, shoppable.
Shop. You might have a jazz bar underground. Like who knows what's going on in this place? Like come and have a good time kind of
surprise.
Thing.
Surprise. Surprise and delight.
But it's luxury, it's high end, it's quality. Like back to what we were talking about, and the customers having it. They're happy to spend their money because they're having a good time and they know they're not being, the experience is right. Yeah, like I really think, I'm giving away a bit much here, but this is what we kind of think about in the background. Now, I know nothing about cars, but I like the vintage ones. I look at them and I think they look cool, you know.
You can team up with Nadia from Ashford. Yeah. She's an absolute killer. Expecting big things from this question for you, so I'm going to give you time to think about it. Okay. What do you believe other people find weird or strongly disagree with?
One thing, and I actually saw a clip of somebody talking about it and it resonated with me because it's how I feel. I'm a very positive, very happy person, but I constantly do things and I'm thinking, I don't think, oh, that was unreal. Like I've done such a good job. And even with the pop-up, one of my friends who is in the retail space said, you must be thrilled. And I'm like, I'm obviously thrilled with how it went, but I'm already thinking like, what are we going to do next week now that we don't have that physical space to keep people interested and keep people happy? And I always thought, is it that I'm not doing enough? Is it that I'm actually a negative person? But it's just the way I am, and it's actually not a negative thing. Like I do something and okay, I don't dwell in like, that was amazing. I feel so proud of myself. But is that such a bad thing? Because it's all at the idea of making it better the next time. And so it was something I kind of felt like I need to take a moment. I need to feel this, but I don't. And I'm happy with how things go. And then I am though always thinking of the next thing. And my new feeling that some people mightn't agree with is that that's not a negative thing.
I feel the exact same. And people always ask me the same question. Who's been the best guest? Who enjoyed the most? Yeah. I'm like, not to give you a bit of a sad answer here, but the next one.
Yeah.
I honestly, and people are like, oh.
Yeah.
So I should just come up with one. Oh, this one's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I literally think of the next thing all the time. And I used to run through the same mental process as you going, why do I not? Why does nothing come to mind? Yeah. That's what I always used to go, why are you not able to remember who your favorite guest was?
Blanks.
But I just go July, August, September. Who's going to be on October, November, December? Which one's going to be the one?
Yeah.
Which one's going to be the one that just catapults you to like number
next
one?
Next level, yeah.
Always think. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
And I could never figure that out either until about 5 months ago. And I was like, just stop thinking about it.
Yeah. Just the way you
give
are.
Give that answer and that's it.
Yeah.
If they're disappointed, they're disappointed.
Okay. Will I go
Don't let me down here. Something outrageous.
Okay. Will I go personal or business? My business one, I don't
know
if it's outrageous, but it's something that I'm very passionate about. And anyone that I, by the way, don't listen to me. Like, don't take any advice. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm still figuring it out.
Cat's face. If you're watching, not watching YouTube, yeah, go watch. Go look at YouTube right now.
No, don't worry. I'm taking it easy.
Why is there two?
I'm taking it easy. So from a business perspective, I think the fastest way and the most productive way to get ahead is to work 100% in the business and not on the business. It's I can get into it, but I'll leave it at that. And then on the personal one, and again, like, I don't know, is it relevant to this podcast, but it's something I do feel passionate about. Like, find the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with as early, as soon as possible, and just get on with it, like, straight away. Move in and just start building your life. The people that I know that are the happiest, and again, this is controversial, I get it, but they met their partners when they were young. They've built the life together, you know, and they kind of were with each other on that journey. And I think when there's two of you, it's just more fulfilling on all aspects, not just business, but personal. Like, Kat's seen me go through like some big personal moments. I've seen her go through some of her big personal moments. And I think just from a happiness perspective, the sooner you find the person, you know, that you think you can live the rest, it's not going to be perfect at the beginning. It never is, but just stick with it. Get over that early, like, immature stage where you're making mistakes. And on the other side, like, you know, is real, real happiness. I really do believe that. And then on the business front, get into the weeds. I mean, like, so in it that you're drowning, like you're underwater, like you're suffocating, you're so involved. And any of the time that we've made monumental steps forward in the business, we talked about this earlier with the coffee, it was on the back of 100-hour weeks being totally in it, like 100% in the business. And if any of the operators, like, I really, really, really respect. Obviously, like, you've Sam Waltman, who founded Walmart. He used to go around, and like, his whole job was just visiting stores, talking with customers, checking how the food was displayed on the shelves. Obviously, Kat's dad worked in retail, and he'd tell me, like, the amount of time he'd just hop in the car and just drive to one of the shops, see what's going on, like, with the customers, how it's working out at the till, is there queues, are the queues too big?
Go around in the delivery vans in most cases.
And he'd go around and see the process.
See how the process works.
Because at the end of the day, if you have no long term, you can raise yourself, keep raising money off with you. But if you want to build a business that's sustainable, that you're not needing other people to come in and you know, give you money, you need sales, you need money coming in, and eventually you need more money coming in that's going out. And for money to come in, you need customers. Customers has to buy things. And all of the customer interactions are in the weeds. So it's your job to service the customer. So you should be in the weeds servicing the customer. By all means, like, if you're talking about on the business and you want to get someone in to, like, operate it at a high level, you can do that. But I think if it's your job and you're running, and your job is to grow the business, you grow it by having happy customers and word of mouth and people having a good experience. And I think that is done in the weeds. It's not done on a high level, like, you know, orchestrating the growth. Any of the time, like I said, we've taken huge step forward. And by the way, obviously every month we're taking huge step forwards. The business has grown every month for 5 years. It's because we're at the level where we're dealing with the customers all the time. Like, we have that interaction with them. And I see a lot of people come on podcasts and they'll all talk about, you know, oh, you have to get your managers in place and you have to start working on the business, not in the business. And I'm like, you're doing, you know, you have two shops. What are you talking about? Like, I know you're laughing. You're thinking, oh, this is good. Like, this is controversial, but it is true. Like, you should be in the shops 24/7. What, you know, customer comes in, they bought something, ask them, well, why did you buy something here today? Like, what led you to buy? Get the feedback, get it into your computer in your head, go back. And then you might have someone operating the business that you've give that feedback to. We need to do more of this. Oh, I'll get on that. I'll do more of that. And you go back and deal with the customers again. And I do think, in fairness, Kat's dad had a massive influence with me. And there's one other guy, two guys I'll give a shout out to, Kat's dad. And another guy is Paul O'Halloran. And I've mentioned this all the time to Kat, who, funnily enough, when I was younger, not that we clashed, he was my first boss in Kiri's BMW. But obviously I left and whatever, we had a bit of a spat. He gave me a good tearing, which I needed at the time. But I've looked back, he was head of business at Kiri's BMWs. He was in charge of the whole BMW dealership. So he was in the big office upstairs. He was never in it. He was on the floor. And I've said this to you, yeah. So he was on the floor dealing with the customers. like there might have been 100 people like there or thereabouts employed in this. It was a big, but like just he's the chief operating officer now of the group. I'm not surprised that he's, you know, driven on and being really successful. But he used to come down from the office and he was on the floor, Gary, and a customer would come in and he'd greet the customer and he'd talk with the customer about the car. And like any time there was an issue, you know, a big, like Hallie, get on the phone. Hallie, this is what we call him, if you know. But Paul would get on the phone. He'd handle it himself. I was a junior sales guy there at the time. So I was like the skivvy. You'd do the jobs that no one else wanted to do. And the amount of times I like drop cars out to people's homes, a spare car, because they were having an issue. And it'd be direct issue. Like Paul would be dealing with that issue himself. Like the level of customer service he provided was insane. And of course, I worked in that car. And the garage was wildly successful. Listen, if you're in Cork, you will get sick of seeing Keery's BMWs. They are, everyone is driving a BMW from Keery's. And I'm not surprised because I thought I saw the culture that he instilled where like he was down on the floor taking care of all the issues. And of course, there was finance and operations upstairs that all reported into him. But he'd find out what's going on the floor and he'd bring it up and then they'd work on the business. But he was 100% in it. And I saw the success of that at a young age. And then obviously Kat's dad, like I've heard what he used to do. And the same thing, like no customers, no business. And if your job is, you know, if you're responsible for the business, then the customers is literally your sole responsibility because without them, you don't have one. And I think far too often businesses get a bit of success and all of a sudden the founder is nowhere to be seen. Like they're just gone. And I think that's a big mistake that people make, big.
Keery's are serious operators.
You have no idea.
Good people.
Gary, let me tell, like, and I, the three people to this day in my like career that I've worked with who had the biggest impact on me was Paul O'Halloran, Keery's, and I worked in some like high level organisations, but he was just unbelievable. Kevin Smith, who's now, by the way, I call these early and I'm going to talk about instincts. Kevin Smith was the accountant in BMW when I started working there. He was an accountant upstairs. He was in charge of like the finances, but just for that specific garage, of which they had a dozen maybe at the time. And he was so talented. And I always said, like, Kev Smith's going to go someplace. Like, he's going somewhere. He's now the chief financial officer of the group. Paul O'Halloran was still specific to that garage. When I got there, he'd just been promoted from sales manager to head of business. Same thing when I saw his obsession with the customer and how much he cared about the customer. I thought, well, if the customer is the key to any business, like, he's going to do well because they love him. He's now the chief operating officer there. And then another guy called Ken O'Neill, who was my direct manager when I worked there. He was absolutely, like, he was so honest. Remember I used to say to you, he'd come into the office at 9:15 and it was like a tsunami came in the door. From 9:00 until 6:00, you've never seen someone so honest in your life. Like, the intensity at which he worked with, and what was he working on? Servicing the customer. And people see now Keery's, it's a huge business. And I talk about it a lot. And the reason I talk about it is because it had a profound impact on me. I saw, like, the culture is customer obsessed. And you see the turnover now, they're doing 300 million a year or whatever it is. I think, yeah, exactly. Because if you focus on the customer over a long enough time horizon, which Keery's have done now for 40 years, you acquire a customer and they just keep coming back. And over the long term, that's massive. If everyone that buys just keeps coming back. And yeah, Keery's are, and listen, I will talk about podcast guests, but if you got someone on, I know they're not like entrepreneurs per se, but these guys are serious.
They were my first ever sponsor.
Yeah.
They backed me when I had a couple of thousand listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will always, forever in my heart, respect that because they give me a shot when no one else did.
Listen.
So I have a soft spot for Keery's.
You and I both.
Forever.
I was unemployable. I had no leaving cert, barely had a junior cert, 19 years of age, never worked. Like, I was unemployable. And this guy, Paul O'Halloran, gave me my first shot down there. And like, that's what they do. And they're known in Cork as like really fantastic employers. Like, they'll give you, if you're willing to work hard, like, that is a company. They only care about your delivery and your willingness to work. And if you do both of those things, there's very little politics. It's all like outcome based.
As it should be.
As it should be. And there's lads there that went in, you know, with absolute, and they're now built tremendous careers for themselves, earning six figures, like really, really successful. It's a fantastic place. I can't recommend it enough.
Kat, what's been your worst investment and what's been your best investment?
Ooh. Tell them about Crocs.
Oh, no, I don't think he means like that. What he's saying there is before Crocs, I hate Crocs, and I know they're big now. I hate them. They make my skin crawl. But I knew that they were going to come back, and I don't do investing. I mean, like, in a literal sense of money. But I was like, Crocs are going to be huge. So I said, they're coming back. I know it. And I put like 20, what did I put in? Like 20 euro. And at one point it was like 180 euro. And then because I don't do that, I forgot about it. And it's like 80 cent now or something. So that was awful. But for more what I think you mean with the question.
That's exactly what I meant, to be fair.
going back to like backing myself earlier. So the best investment was growing more confidence and backing myself more. And the worst investment is the time I spent not doing that.
I love the Crocs answer. Thanks.
But the Crocs is, yeah, you have to bring that up. I'd forgotten about that.
That'll do well on TikTok. Yeah. Killian.
Yeah. So my best investment, and I say nothing for just the sake of saying it, I do give like thoughtful answers, without a doubt, has been like the relationship with Kat. And I do think like, and I think that's why working together has been so good, because it's allowed us to work on the actual relationship and the business at the same time. So that's the biggest investment and best investment I've made. It's just the time I've put into this relationship. It's led to everything else, without a doubt. And then the worst investment I've made. I don't know, Kat.
It can be time invested as well.
What is that? Like
Running.
Running. Like, I haven't lost money in anything I've ever put money into. So, like, from a pure monetary perspective, I'm quite, like, literally, I've never come out the wrong side of something. So, and then in terms of time, like, I feel like everything served its purpose. So, like, obviously, I'm massively grateful for that, but probably running. Yeah. It was horrible.
Any time spent running.
And I done a marathon. I done the Paris marathon last year. So like there was the training camp for that, and the whole thing was just, I hated it. I hated the marathon. And then, you know, they say like, you know, you finish it. Oh, you've done a marathon. Let me tell you, like, we got past the finish line, and this is Paris. Like, this is a major marathon, and it was the year the Olympics was on there. So it was like extra pumped up, and we passed the finish line. And of course, there's literally thousands of people on the straight and we passed it. And I actually turned around to Kat, and I said, like, is this it? This is the feeling everyone was talking about. Like, this is it. It was horrendous. Like, and I said to everyone, you're like, I know you're big into running. And like,
so am I.
So is like Kat. Kat's a legit runner. Like, you know, sub 19 minute 5K. Like, yeah, she's legit. Like, she can do it. But I'm horrendous. And yeah, I just think unless you really enjoy it, there's different ways to. I'm enjoying all the research coming out now that like running's bad for you. I know it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, see that, Kat, it's bad for your knees. I told you shouldn't weightlifting. Go to the gym. Like, it's the way to do it, kind of a thing.
Balance. Hey, balance. I know you hate balance, but definitely balance and training. Yeah. Right. Final question. I'm slightly keeping it the same, slightly changing it. I usually say, what one piece of advice, right? But what actionable piece of advice would you give to people? Because we've talked about advice being a bit of a double-edged sword here. If you could leave people with one thought, one insight, one thing they must do, what is it?
Will I take it first?
Yeah, if you want
to. Yeah, I think it ties in with one of my answers to your last questions. And I do think to do anything well, there has to be a reason. And I do think the reason is rooted in like a greater purpose. Like I said before, I am faithful, but also like I do everything because like I want to build a life with Kat. You know, I want us to be A-okay. Want us to have children, be able to provide for those children, whatever they want to do, you know, they'll be able to go off and do it. So I do think the one bit of advice that I will give is, and it mightn't be, it could be anything, it could be your parents, whatever, but, and it sounds cliche, but really listen to what I'm saying, like find something that makes it all worth it. Because without it, you just won't do it. It's too hard. It's so hard that you need a greater purpose to push on, you know, when it is tough and when you don't want to do it. That would be my advice, like really find something. And it can't just be something small, you know, like I want to do a million sales next year just for the sake of it. Oh no, it has to be something far greater than that, a far bigger purpose. So that would be the one bit of advice I give anyone, and I have given it to people. I have a younger brother, like I said, Jack, and that's what I say to him all the time. He's working hard now with us. Like, Jack, unless you find something that's really going to make all this worth it, you know, you won't sustain years of this. So that would be my one bit of advice.
Kat?
That's such a nice answer.
Well, it's true.
Mine would be that I think people miss out on so much of their lives because of what other people think and say. And I look at like so much of my life from leaving school, where I was grateful to have parents that weren't like, you're a failure. They just knew that it wasn't for me. And, you know, do what you want. And of course, then people that I was in school with were like, oh, your one's not in school. Like, is she gone off the rails? Or they can think what they want. It's not the truth. And it goes along with everything in life. You start a business, people are like, oh, see her one, she thinks she's going to do something. Then like an article comes out, like the ones that came out about Luxury Exchange. And, you know, you're full of yourself. Like, people will always have something to say. If it doesn't work out, they'll have something to say. If it works out, they will. You have to just do what you want. And it makes me really sad when I think of people not doing that because of what other people will say, because it has no impact. And sometimes it sticks in your head because it's negativity. But the truth is, it has no impact. Like, it shouldn't have any impact on your life and what you do. So I think just not caring so much about what random people are going to think or say or comment on your Instagram post.
Oh, what a way to wrap up. That has been immense.
Thank you.
I think
that
you've
was
taken
amazing.
The record. You're not close off the far off the record of 2 hours on the pod.
No way.
That's
that close was 2 hours.
No way.
To
a
record.
Are
you serious? Yeah. God, I hope people get to the end. They get some good answers.
It's so weird being on this podcast because it is genuinely my favorite podcast. I listen to it all the time. Like, I re-listen to older episodes. So being in it is so weird.
When I talked to you about John Larkin, 4 million euros in soap, I was sitting and can't know. I came back. I had been golfing down in Foda, and on the way back from my golf club, there's a KFC. I was starving. I called in, got a KFC. I'm sitting there and this pops up on my YouTube feed and I listen to it. And I'd just gone full time in Luxury Exchange at the time. So maybe we were doing like maybe 50k a month at that stage. And I remember listening to John Larkin and I saw it. And I came back to you. I was like, God, this guy's doing 4 million quid a year in soap. I was like, if you can generate that kind of revenue in soap, like, imagine what we can do. Like, the dream is real.
Love that.
And it is real. Like, you can do it. So it is a kind of a cool experience to be back here now.
Definitely.
Because I'm telling you, that episode had a massive effect. And Kat said it earlier, when we were having a coffee off camera, that I mention it every couple of days, because I do. Because the ads come up and I see him and I'm like, he's banging out soap. what a legend.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, we can do it. If he can do it, he's here in Ireland selling soap, like, we can do it. Like, I'm telling you, we can.
It's such a buzz when people tell me that. Yeah. Because it's quite weird doing the podcast, because obviously we do it in this room.
Yeah.
It's just three of us and Ben. Couldn't do it without Ben. But it's weird, right?
Yeah.
Now tens of thousands of people will listen. Yeah. Hopefully hundreds of thousands of people listen. And often you don't get the feedback of like, what happened after the pod? And sometimes guests will message me going, oh, you'll never believe I met this person, we got a deal, blah, 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 blah. Amazing.
Yeah.
But to hear that kind of story from you guys is immense.
Well, if you're talking to John, you can tell him, because it is the truth. And it did lead, came back. I was buzzing. I was like, Kat, I'm telling you, like, I was confident before. I'm dead certain now that we can do this.
Immense.
Like, yeah.
Where can people learn more about yourselves and Luxury Exchange?
Oh, well, you can take that away.
If you don't know us at all and you want the full experience, go on to our Instagram page. That's where we put up like the most content. That's where our live shopping is. We also have a broadcast channel, which we do encourage everyone to be in. It is almost 2,500 members. We put like new arrivals in there, special deals. And then from there, you'll see our website, our other platforms. But Instagram is the one that, if you don't know us, I'd like you to go and get to know us there.
Immense. Kat, Killian,
Gary,
pleasure.
It has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, pal.